this is the early phases or the beginning of, you know, I would say World War III, I get maybe World War IV, but this is the beginning of a world war. I mean, when you just look at how close these two fronts are, we're talking about Europe, we're talking about the Middle East, and then we're talking about basically everyone who's standing kind of against the American dominance. And again, China is who we're supposed to be worried about. I think most people agree that we should be worried about China. Yet every move that we're taking from the time that we started supporting the Ukrainians and kicking Russia off the SWIFT system to starting the war in Iran with the Straits of Hormuz, the biggest benefactor has been China.
Since 2022. You in Europe, European taxpayers, because that's where the money comes from. Remember that it doesn't get created. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes from the taxpayer. That's you. Since 2022, Ukraine has been given 220 billion euros. Think about that. That's just the money that's been given to Ukraine. Forget about the massive impact, the billions in impact that it's had on economies. Forget about the trade between Ukraine and Russia. All the damage that's been done to the European Union, for example, the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, the blowing up of the biggest energy infrastructure project in history of European Union, destroyed, blown up.
European imports from China have increased by 45%. Over the past 5 years, while our exports to China are declining. Our trade deficit with China now stands at nearly 1 billion euros per day, and it has risen another 10% since the beginning of this year.
Do you see why Americans have a problem sending billions of our tax dollars to Ukraine? That's Irina Mudra, who was until last week the deputy head of Zelensky's own presidential office. You know, being walked out in handcuffs on money laundering charges.
We just had to move our fleet away from the Pacific, which is actually our border.
Isn't it the first time pre-World War II we have no aircraft carrier over there?
14% of the Navy's fleet is now in the Caribbean, according to IEJ Media, including a buildup of 10,000 Marines and sailors, a dozen warships, a nuclear-powered fast attack submarine, a special operations mothership with drone capabilities, three guided missile destroyers, and the USS Iwo Jima, with an amphibious ready group on board. The USS Lake Erie, a guided missile cruiser with 32 Tomahawk missiles, was pulled from the Pacific and is now focusing on Venezuela, where the U.S. sent three B-52s escorted by stealth F-35s on a show of force mission.
And the Russians also realize that we are caught right now in this, you know, quagmire in the Middle East. We're having to move strategic assets away from other theaters, very important ones like the Pacific, to cover our bases in the Middle East. And so the Russians right now realize that our back is against the wall. We are running low on weapon systems, obviously. We got into the MOU. We got out of the MOU. We're stalled. So right now is a time where Russia is having their back put against the wall because of what Ukraine's doing with our assistance. And I'm not, you know, justifying or covering for Putin, but I don't think Americans understand Russian politics enough to know that Putin actually is relatively moderate within Russia. There are people that are criticizing him in his military and in his political establishment that are saying that this war in Ukraine's gone on for too long. Why aren't we being more serious? Why aren't we pushing forward? Why aren't we striking back? So I don't think the American people realize how close we are right now to a war that could, you know, change history, whether it goes nuclear or whether it just expands and Russia actually does start hitting some targets deeper into Ukraine or even some of our NATO partners. And then what happens after that? Then we're going to have to respond.
Today is the 1st of September, the day when World War II began. We need to make sure that there are no provocations globally that would instigate new global conflicts. I'm sure that our work will help us achieve that.
These countries are allegedly trying to settle the conflict and are trying to get their place at the negotiation table. We have been underscoring many times that any foreign contingents that are preventing the durable peace are unacceptable, and they will become legitimate targets. And the responsibility will be with those who has made the decision to further escalate the conflict.
We've heard Putin say this multiple times that, you know, the president of the United States actually doesn't matter. It's the men in the dark suits who do matter. And so the Russians are very aware that we run NATO. And so everything that's being done to them by the Ukrainians with NATO weaponry, NATO targeting, they view it as us doing.
Ladies and gentlemen, When you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed three. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait till we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. But now it's ready. There's so many incredible things. The very best testosterone, energy, muscle, libido, mood, sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, all the good peptides, the NAD, all of them. HIPAA compliant, your health information is 100% protected. They got everything. Go there now, and it supports this broadcast with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It is the 2nd of September, 2026, rather. It is not last year. We got a very big show for you today. We're going to be joined by Margaret Roberts. She is a prize-winning investigative journalist and television producer. We also may be joined by some other people along with her to talk about the investigative documentary that the Tucker Carlson Network is putting out tomorrow about the Oklahoma City bombing. So we'll be revisiting a classic case in the conspiracy world and talking about how thoroughly the powers that be are able to manipulate the American people over decades. Very excited to talk to her. I admit I'm a little distracted. I'm a little distracted right now because I was watching the Adam King debate with Alex Jones. And I must have missed the part. Apparently Alex said, you know, he wanted me to do a debate with Adam King. I got to admit, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in debating this stuff with people like Adam King. I'm just not. Nothing against Adam King, but he's not an honest broker here. So why would we waste our time? You know what it reminds me of? Nobody listening to me right now is going to get this reference. Maybe there might be a dozen people in America that are going to get this reference, and they're going to love it. The rest of you, trust me on this. Come with me on this one. There used to be a little theater in Houston, Texas, just off Richmond Avenue, called Radio Music Theater. And it was one of the funniest things you've ever seen. You'd go there and get dinner and watch this skit. It was, I think, three people did it. And they'd all be changing clothes and play a bunch of different characters. It was an amazing production. I used to have a shirt from Radio Music Theater, and it just said, "Nails are glue." And if you understand that reference, you already know where I'm going with this, but it might be kind of hard to explain. But there's a character in this play who could not be wrong. He couldn't be wrong. And if he was wrong, he had to explain why he was actually right. And so this quote, "Nails are glue," comes from the scene where they're playing Trivial Pursuit, and he says glue, and the person says, "No, the answer is nails." And he goes into this long-winded explanation of how, well, if we all understand glue as being a substance that keeps two other substances together, and we can all agree that nails are made of a substance, and the purpose of the nail is to combine two, and it just goes on and on. Therefore, nails are glue. Just so he didn't have to be wrong at Trivial Pursuit. Just, and it was, you know, it was a common theme for him where anything he got wrong, he'd come up with some sort of excuse as to, well, he was actually right. There's one line where he says something about Lady Gaga, and they're like, "That's not right." He's like, "Oh, you think I meant that lady? No, I was talking about Esmeralda Gaga of the 18th dynasty of Scotland, known, of course, as a lady, as her, you know, position dictated." And it's like, no, you were just wrong. You were wrong about whatever you said. So just accept it, and then we can move forward. But that's sort of the vibe I get, I guess, is my point, is this is the mindset I think we're dealing with the likes of Adam King. If you're arguing with somebody who is trying to convince you that nails are in fact glue, you could just stop talking to them. There's no point in talking to them anymore. You're not actually trying to get to the answer. You're not actually debating anything. You're just participating in their rhetorical rigmarole. You know, you're on their carousel of semantics, and it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. So I'm not really interested in debating any of this stuff. None of it is up for debate, okay? You can assert over and over again that Israel did not get America into this war. Why would I have to subject myself to that lie? When we all know, when it is acknowledged by the very people that did it on the day that they made the decision, you've got Marco Rubio, Mark Warner, you know, Senator Mark Warner, you've got, I think Chuck Schumer came out and said it that day. Obviously, Hegseth admitted it. Trump has said it multiple times. So, you know, am I going to sit here and debate somebody about whether the sky is blue? Why would I waste my time? That's genuinely how I feel. If somebody was like, you got to debate this guy, he is convinced the sky is red. I'm just going to be like, no. What? No. Why? Why would I do that? What would be the point of that? Why would I subject myself or my audience to just baseless lies that are prima facie absurd? Why would I sit here and have to try to argue whether or not nails are glue? They're not. Okay, so just stop saying that they are. I just keep having flashbacks. Radio Music Theater. And the very complicated reasoning that has to go into it. Well, you understand, if we're going to define glue as something, it's just like, we're not doing this. We're not doing this. I'm not participating. I'm not going along with it. There's no point. There's no point because you're not actually going for truth. You're not actually going for anything you claim to be going for. So I'm not going to subject myself to it. But yeah, I did think it would be a perhaps useful time to, you know, look at one of the things that was discussed. That is the account Parody Jeff on X, at Parody Jeff. Parody Jeff X, I believe. Because Adam King called out this account and said they're always just posting these random rabbis saying things and acting like they're important when really these rabbis are nobody. They're giving some speech to 12 people. Nobody cares. And then he goes online and suddenly blows up and they say he's friends with Netanyahu. And that's just not true. Of course, the weird thing is Adam King's like, he's not friends with Netanyahu. I'm friends with him. I talk to him twice a day. And it's like, so you twice a day talk to the rabbi that says all goy are slaves? Like what? You do? You talk to that guy? Okay, conversation over. Like, why are you having a conversation with somebody who's best friends with Rabbi Mizrachi? Like, that's nuts. But basically he says, you know, these accounts, Parody Jeff being one of them, post this stuff and it's all lies, and it's just all lies. And he said, I you know, spread this stuff as well. Yeah, guilty. I do retweet things that are pertinent to geopolitics and my own people's survival into the future. So I thought we'd kind of go down Parody Jeff and see what he says and whether what he says is true or not. Because one thing that Parody Jeff has started doing that I really appreciate is tagging Grok on a lot of his posts and basically saying something that doesn't seem true, that you don't want to believe on the face of it, and then just saying, is this true, Grok? And sure enough, you go into the comments and yeah, it's true. So I thought we could peruse Parody Jeff here for a minute. Thailand declares national emergency over Israeli tourists. Locals throw them out for causing chaos. They retaliate by destroying everything and behaving like absolute maniacs. Israeli chaos in the Netherlands. Maccabee Tel Aviv football fans erupted after being told by locals they aren't welcome. They blocked traffic, surrounded cars, and started pulling people out of their vehicles to attack them. And, you know, I don't know when this happened, because I remember this happening a couple months ago, which was true, but, you know, maybe it happened again, maybe it's a different date. You know, there are things like that can happen. But see here, this is what he does. Hey, Grok, what is the origin of this writer's surname? Stop pretending abortion is tragic, why we should feel relief, not regret. And, of course, he's tagging Grok in the hope that he points out, as he does, that it's an Ashkenazi Jewish surname of Yiddish origin. So this is what Parody Jeff is sort of known for. But again, I think he's got some interesting statements here. Rabbi Shmuley rejects Jesus Christ, tells Christians to stop crying over IDF soldiers lately desecrating Christian sites. He says Israel is protecting Christians, and Tucker Carlson's the real enemy. Of course. The IDF risks its life to protect Christians all the time. all the time. I heard Adam King say, Israel wants Lebanon to be Christian. It's just like, no, they don't, okay? I mean, this is what the debate would be like between me and Adam King. You know, Israel wants Lebanon to be Christian. Me, no, they don't. What are you talking about? Like, what? No, they're literally depopulating Christian areas of Lebanon. The villages in the south, some of them were exclusively Christian. They just blew up a crusader castle in Lebanon. They captured the castle. Then they blew it up, in addition to smashing statues of Christ with giant hammers, in addition to causing the refugee crisis that did actually turn Lebanon from a Christian country up till the late 80s, it was majority Christian, into the Muslim country it is now. That is a direct result of Israeli interference in the Middle East, Israeli activity, pushing the Palestinians into Lebanon and then going to war with the PLO to destroy Lebanon, inspiring the, I mean, it's all Israel at the end of the day. It's literally all Israel. So to come out and say Israel wants a Christian Lebanon, it's like, why would I let somebody say that to me? Why would I do that? That doesn't make any sense. You see what I'm saying? Like, why would I subject myself to such an outrageous lie? I'm insulted that he would even try to say that. But let's keep looking. Hey, Grok, Baruch Lanner, a New Jersey high school principal, was convicted of sexually abusing teenage students, including touching their breasts in intimate areas. Was he Jewish? Let's find out. Let's see what Grok says. Yes, Baruch Lanner was an Orthodox rabbi and principal of Hillel Yeshiva High School. He was convicted in 2002 of aggravated sexual contact and endangering the welfare of students. That's interesting. Rabbi Peter Schachtman was arrested in a New York child exploitation scheme after arranging to meet a young child to abuse her inside his synagogue. That one's more recent. And he also retweets this other pedo rabbi, Jewish rabbi Peter Schachtman. Oh, it's the same guy, I guess, being arrested. Hey, Grok, is this professor Jewish? Professor who said pedophiles should be called minor attracted persons agrees to resign. I don't think we need to click the Grok button. I think we know our answer. Mark Levin flies to Jerusalem and starts denying everything before anybody even asks. I'm not an agent for Mossad. I never conspired with the Israeli government. I don't take orders from Israel. That's from the 2026 International Policy Summit. Hey, Grok, based off their documented crimes, who would you trust with an atomic bomb, Iran or Israel? Name the country first. Let's see what Grok has to say about this. Israel. It is widely assessed to already possess nuclear weapons, yet has never used them across decades of conflict. Iran ran structured weapons program, continues high-level enrichment. Remember, they literally lobotomized Grok in order to get it to be pro-Israel. Start with country Iran or Israel. Which has directly killed more civilians in military operations outside its own territory since 2000? Israel. Available data from Betzalem UNOCHA, Gaza Health Ministry, and related tallies attribute tens of thousands of Palestinian civilian deaths in Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, and Syria to Israeli military campaigns since 2000. Majority of reported fatalities in major campaigns. Documented civilian deaths from direct Iranian military action outside Iran, primarily limited cross-border ops in Iraq and advisory roles in Syria, number in the low hundreds at most. But Iran would be more dangerous, obviously. In 10 days, we get to remember about the dancing Israelis. And then finally, I just want to go to a few more here. Like this one, because these two I saw from Parody Jeff, and I didn't believe them at first. I was like, come on, really? Really? Israel has effectively shut down all Christian schools in Jerusalem after refusing permits for more than 70 teachers and staff. So let's see what Grok has to say about this. He could be lying after all. Adam King says he lies about everything and is always posting untrue things. But Grok says, yes, reports from the General Secretariat of Christian Educational Institutions and outlets, including the Jerusalem Post, confirmed that all Christian schools in Jerusalem suspended classes starting today after Israeli authorities did not renew entry permits for more than 70 West Bank teachers and staff, preventing a normal school year opening. Now, I heard Adam King go on and on about how Christians were more safe now under Zionism than ever in history before. It's a little bit odd considering that the population of Christians in these areas was significantly higher after literally 1,000 years of Islamic rule over that area. since 1948, the population has cratered everywhere, including things like Lebanon, a formerly Christian country, being turned Muslim, but obviously in the West Bank and Palestine and elsewhere throughout the region, the Christian population has collapsed. And then finally, this one. Hey, Grok, did one of Flock Camera's directors, Trevor Chandler, previously work for AIPAC for more than 5 years? Grok says, yes, Trevor Chandler served as progressive outreach director at AIPAC from 2017 to 2022, over 5 years. He's currently the senior director of policy of public affairs at Flock Safety, which I think is fascinating. I think that's extremely fascinating. So this is what I mean. I mean, if you're asking me to choose between Parody Jeff and Adam King, I got one guy who's apparently best friends with Rabbi Mizrachi, a guy who thinks that I, as a non-Jew, am just destined to be a slave. You're asking me to trust somebody who says that Christians are the safest now than they've ever been, despite the fact I'm watching with my own eyes. And in fact, we'll be joined on Friday by Jason Jones, who runs a Vulnerable People Project that is documenting in real time the deliberate extermination of Jewish people from the West Bank. Yeah, I'm going with Parody Jeff on that. I'm going with the anonymous anti-Semitic Twitter account on this one, because they're more honest, obviously. I mean, the proof is there. But I guess you can believe whoever you want. So sort of a bit of a long ramble, but I got other videos that, you know, this sort of falls into, same type of thing. Got videos of Ben Shapiro, you know, trying to explain how stupid everybody else is when they don't understand just how amazing and perfect Trump is and the GOP is, and that now it's been taken over completely by Israel. That's probably a good thing, actually, and you're the bad one for not liking it. And I've got the video, but half of me is like, do I even give it the time of day? Like, do I really have to go through and just point by point just be like, that's a lie, and that's a lie, and that's ridiculous? Because really, it's obvious. I mean, it's not, it is like arguing if the sky is red or if nails are glue. It's like, we don't need to be having this conversation. I don't need to be debating whether or not Christians are under attack by Israel. I don't need to be debating whether I have brown hair or am wearing shoes. You know, it's like some things we just don't need to discuss. And the only really conclusion that you can come to from a discussion about these things is this person is a liar who can't be trusted, is not coming from a place of goodwill or trying to seek the truth, is not genuine in anything that they say. So why would we talk to them? Why would we listen to them? Why are they constantly imposing their crap upon us and we have to spend our precious life debating about whether the sky is blue or Israel is attacking Christians? No, they are. So that we can just leave it at that. And if you're telling me they're not, you're lying and you're covering for them. So there it is. It's pretty simple. So I think we'll move on here. But obviously, I totally agree. I thought Alex did a great job. And I, you know, it's really nice actually watching. So I'm like, I'm not going to debate, God forbid. But I like watching Alex debate because you hear Adam King go on and on and you're just like, oh my God, the number of lies this guy's saying. How is Alex even going to confront the number of crap, you know, like the number of lies are spewing right now? And Alex just comes back on and is like, yeah, look, I'm just telling you, like, this isn't going well for y'all and this isn't going to work anymore. It's like, thank you. Yes, that is the exact right thing to say. I'm not even going to debate the point you made. I'm just going to let you know, like, we're not buying it and you can stop. You can stop at any point. You don't need to do this. There's a better way. It's like, that needs to be the reaction. It's just looking him in the eye and going, do you think this is working? Do you think you're being believed right now? It's not working. Clip number one here is from CNN, because it's not just the right wing. Everybody's sick of this. Everybody is pissed at Israel. Everybody gets that Israel destroyed Donald Trump's second administration. They understand Israel got us into the war in Iran. They understand that there's not a coincidence that Flock cameras and data centers are also being pushed exclusively by the biggest Zionist in this country, because they want to treat America like they've been treating Palestine for the last 80 years. In fact, that's the video we should play. Maybe I'll find it in the break if the crew can find it. Find the video I made in 2023, shortly after the attack of October 7th, where I explained that Gaza is a 15-minute city. It is the prototype for what they want to do everywhere. It is you're not allowed to leave your zone without permission. There are going to be automated AI machine guns mounted above the gates, so you can be taken out before you're ever entered, surveilled constantly. It's a 15-minute city. And you understand the very same, the literally same people that are doing it to the Palestinians are planting the exact same type of infrastructure here. Should we ask Adam King what that's for? Do you think Adam King would honestly tell us? Are you kidding me? And this is something that I feel this way about a lot of people on the right wing, and I feel the opposite about a lot of Jews. So we don't need to take it that way either. Like, I can think of a lot of people, and even if they're Jewish, even if they have a inherent or sort of traditional support of Israel, you point out what they're doing wrong and they go, oh, really? That's happening? Holy crap. I don't like that at all. And you can just see the genuine reaction from people. Person that jumps to mind is Viva Fry. Viva gets a lot of crap all over the place because he's standing up against the Candace stuff and, you know, he sort of made himself a target in some way, but like having spent a couple days just hanging out with Viva Fry during the debates, he is a genuine dude. Say what you want about him. He's a genuine dude. And when I would talk to him about Israel or I'd talk to him about Jews or whatever, I mean, it's like talking to a real human being that's actually interacting with. And maybe he says, well, you know, I think that's kind of unfair. I think, you know, this is the reason they're doing that. And if he's coming to me with honesty, with openness, with genuine understanding, then I'm happy to, you know, hey, maybe you're right. You know, that is a reason they might do that. I'm still not for it, but hey, at least we can have the conversation. You can have a conversation with people that are open-minded and that are genuinely seeking the truth. Adam King is not one of them. Ben Shapiro is not one of them. Mark Levin is not one of them. Okay? Will Chamberlain is not one of them. So we just need to be, I think we need to be a little bit circumspect about, you know, who we're talking to about this stuff. Let's go to clip number, and that's not a criticism or anything. I completely understand why Alex would have Adam King on, and I think it's probably a good idea at the end of the day for him, but I just personally, I'm not interested in playing that game with them personally. I'm just not going to subject myself to it. Thank you, but no thank you. Let's go to clip number one here. CNN discussing Israel and our happy marriage to that faraway, horrible little country. Let's watch.
Our number one ally, Israel, not only gets our ability to get oil.
Our number one ally?
Really?
Our number one ally suckers us into war?
If you want to talk about
suckering the United States into war as we speak. That's one of his campaign platforms that he's pushing right now in Israel.
Yeah, it's on his social media.
Are you denying that?
It's on Israeli TV.
Give an answer?
Are you implying that the United States was dragged into war by Israel against our interests?
Bibi said on television, it took a long time to get the U.S. to come to its senses, but I finally got it to attack it under my influence and over its leaders through 1,000 hours on American television. That came right out of the leader of Israel's mouth.
Yeah, but, you know, whatever, who cares? But actually, Trump made his own decision, okay? America is a sovereign country, and we chose on our own volition to go to war with Iran. Had nothing to do with Israel, okay? I mean, except for the fact that we're completely occupied entirely by Israeli sycophants. That did have something to do with it, but they did claim to be American. Yeah, I'm just going to tell the truth for now, and I don't need to worry myself with lies anymore, I think.
Let me make a huge announcement that has been 3 years being prepared, and that is a giant, fantastic, full online pharmacy with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. I mean, we've got the heads of the different national associations on the board of this. It's not my company. It's the folks we've been working with that are going to build the whole new network and all the new systems. So when you get a great deal on your online pharmacy, they got everything under the sun with the very best service and the very best quality, no matter where you are. Then the funds go into building a new army in the info war that will dwarf our past activity, a true 360 win, announcing freedomrxhealth.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is incredible. The prices are super low. It's all the highest quality, and it's everything. And obviously, with all the stuff we've been embroiled in the last few years, fighting the deep state info wars, it didn't launch. because they would just try to blow it up on the ground. But now it's ready. Everything is at FreedomRx, one word, FreedomRxHealth.com. But we're focusing today on several of the big areas that I want to recommend to you. And it's so easy, and it's so quick, and it's literally like on average 30% of what you get at a local doctor's office. And the service is so much better. Something Trump did good legalizing telemedicine in his first administration. The very best testosterone therapy and all the other hormonal therapy, energy, muscle, libido, mood, all the good peptides, the BPC-157, NAD, all of them, every single one of them. And what I've seen with the professional football players I know and friends and doctors and scientists and all the stuff that's going on, it is incredible. They've got every single one with the lowest prices. Sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, cognitive support. They got everything. And everything is cash, no insurance. Medication shipped directly to the patient door in discreet packages. All protocols are physician prescribed through a licensed telehealth physician network. It's all there. There's only one rule up front. Patients cannot call in to sign up. It has to all be done through the portal, so it follows all the laws. Very easy to do. All new patients must go through the portal at FreedomRxHealth.com. This protects the patient, the physician, and the platform legally. Once onboarded, patients can reach support by phone or by mail, but sign-up is entirely online so that all the laws are followed. It's so simple. Do it in a few minutes. HIPAA-compliant, your health information is 100% protected. Patient goes to FreedomRxHealth.com. Patient selects the protocol and completes the intake. Patient does the labs at a local, either recommended or blood testing facility of your choice. For physician review and consultation, prescription written, medication ships to the patient's door. Six easy steps. When you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Your health, your business, nobody else's. FreedomRx, preserving health, upholding values. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed three. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait until we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. Go now to FreedomRxHealth.com. Preserving health, upholding values, your health, your business, nobody else's, the very best quality, the total selection of everything, the best telemedicine, so easy, the ball's in your court. Go now to FreedomRxHealth.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room, War Room Live. Share that link. Follow us on Rumble, rumble.com/the War Room Live. rumble.com/the War Room Live. You know, I spent the first segment talking about Adam King and sort of the way I refuse to sort of discuss things with the people like that. And there's, you know, I don't just say it because of the debate today, because of Adam King. I mean, think about the number of things just this week that have been admitted to. I mean, they called you an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist for saying that Thomas Massie was ousted by, and you didn't have to say the Jews, you could say Israeli interests, it doesn't matter. If you said the Jews, you'd be right, according to them. The Iran war, obviously, even just the video that we saw, CNN, where there's like, Israel didn't get us into the war. How dare you say it? And they're just like, do we need the quotes from Trump and Bibi and Rubio and Hegseth, all the people that got us into the war? Do we need to hear from them? Because they say it. So just like, can we stop doing this? This is what I mean when I keep saying like it's making everybody insane. It's because you have these people just making absurd statements that they know are not true. And everybody else is sitting here like trying to figure out how to reason with them. It's like, no, you're going to go crazy trying to reason with people that are just lying to you and like running circles around you, just getting you to chase their tail because you're trying to like actually treat their statements as legitimate. You know, the other thing I think about is the time I got robbed during a house party and I caught the guy in the act. And he's just like, you know, refuses to admit. He's, no, I was looking for Jeff, man. No, Greg. I was looking for Greg, man. I'm like, there's no one named Greg here. And it's just like, what, am I going to debate him? I caught him on his hands and knees rummaging through my stuff in my closet. Like, at a certain point, we don't need to talk about it. I don't need to hear his excuses. I don't need to listen to him anymore. And if I'm going to sit here going, gosh, did he really lose a penny in my closet and is looking for it? Was he really looking for his friend Jeff and thought maybe he was on the bottom shelf of my closet? Like, what are we doing? No, no, no. He's just lying to get away with it. Like, we don't need to listen to them. It's really kind of frustrating. And that CNN clip is kind of the perfect example of that stuff. Or the West Bank attacks. Adam King's like, they aren't really, you know, nobody's attacking Christians in the West Bank. Like, of course they are. What are you talking about? You're just in favor of it. Can we have that discussion? Can we talk about why you're in favor of it? Of course not. We're not going to have that. We're not going to have that conversation. Never. Let's go to this video because this is sort of parallels what we just showed on CNN. Only this is on the GOP side. This is the video I just put in there, guys. I don't think it has a number. Posted by Michael Tracy, it's the GOP primary candidates for Wyoming's at-large congressional district. They were given a prompt to comment on Israel, and the prompt was literally the word Israel. And I guess this was sort of one of those what's the first word that comes to mind sort of things, because the prompt, they're like, the prompt is Israel, go. And everybody just says one or two words. And it's, I mean, the spectrum we're dealing with here is totally fascinating and I think very revealing. So let's go now. This is the Wyoming primary candidates for the at-large congressional district asked to comment on the word, quote, Israel. Let's watch.
Next prompt is from Claire McFarlane.
Israel.
Mr. Freese, you're first to respond.
Our ally in the Middle East. All of us can go visit the holy sites where Jesus walked because Israel's in control.
Ms. Bailo.
Historical and strategic ally.
Mr. Dodson.
Israel is not Judaism.
Mr. Christensen.
Israel is an important ally. It is an important asset for us in the Middle East, and we have to always cultivate that relationship with them.
Mr. Giroir.
Where our priorities align, we should work with Israel as a force multiplier, and where they diverge, we should be okay going about our own separate ways.
Mr. Gray.
Israel's a strategic ally, but all of our policy in regards to Israel must be driven by an America First goal. It must be driven by America First policy goals.
Mr. Biden.
Mossad, Jeffrey Epstein got us in the Iran war. Used to be a strong ally, but now I'm starting to question that.
Mr. Reisner.
Israel is our greatest ally in the region, and I always say it's Wyoming first, America always, and Israel forever.
Thank you. We'll continue.
So that's quite the spectrum there. We go from, as Michael Tracy notes, quote, Wyoming first, America always, Israel forever, all the way down to Mossad and Jeffrey Epstein got us into this war. This is called diversity, folks. See, I love diversity. I love having a wide range of opinions represented by our politicians. You'll notice there's not a lot of middle ground going on. There's not a lot of middle ground because they don't make that possible. The Israelis who are doing this, the Jewish organizations like the Republican Jewish Coalition, who bragged endlessly about ousting Thomas Massie despite calling you an anti-Semite for saying that same thing a month ago, they're the ones saying it. Let's go to clip 22 here. When Thomas Massie and the Israeli lobby took him out, it was condemned as anti-Semitic. When Thomas Massie said the Israeli lobby took him out, it was condemned as anti-Semitic yesterday. Republican Jewish Coalition Chairman Norm Coleman bragged, "We played the lead role in taking out Congressman Thomas Massie," confirming yet again that reality is, quote, anti-Semitic. Let's go to clip 22 here.
The RJC does not look the other way when the poison shows up in our own house. We take it on. We played the lead role in taking out Congressman Thomas Massie in his primary. Because a Republican who treats Israel as a problem and votes with the far left against the Jewish states does not get a pass from us. We named it, we funded the fight, and Kentucky Republicans sent him home.
From Wall Street Journal, published May 21st of this year, after losing a primary election Tuesday night, Representative Thomas Massie peddled the oldest anti-Semitic trope in the book, that conniving Jews hold secret power. Conniving, huh? It's a good word. That's a very apt word, actually. I think that's what's going on here. I think they're conniving. I think they're all conniving together. Can this be, is this, the, maybe this is the delineation that we need. You know, people try to find a good, well, they're not Jews, they're Zionist. Well, you can't say, it's not the Republican Zionist coalition, it's the Republican Jewish coalition. Thomas Massie lost, so now he can be more open about his disgusting views. That's the guy that just gave that speech, I guess. Kentucky Fried Clown. So again, the option is not available to be lukewarm on Israel. The options being presented to us are be abject, just lick spittle subjects of Israel, or expel all of their influence completely, make it illegal, do what must be done to extract this poison from our veins. Those seem to be the only options, and that seems to be the categories that the candidates we just listened to fall into. Either Israel number one, Israel forever, greatest ally, we can't live without them. They make our hearts sing and we see rainbow colors when we think of them, or they got us into the war in Iran. They're tearing down the Republican Party. They're tearing down America, really. And we have to free ourselves from the shackles tied around this millstone that is dragging us to hell. Those are your options, according and in a system set up by the powerful Jewish forces that decided that even Thomas Massie and his extremely moderate opposition to foreign aid, including to Israel, was enough to make him a target for absolute eradication, destruction. So, I'm glad we all get that, right? I mean, we don't have to debate anything about this. This is just what's happening. We'll move on now. We got a lot of other news to talk about, but it's all intertwined, related, and in many ways, a lot of the same problems, same maybe different topics, but same methods being used. We can go to another one, because I don't want to give other people a pass. I'm not singling out the Jews for any reason. You got Ayanna Pressley over there too, trying to gaslight everybody in the most outrageous way. Clip number 11 from The Blaze. Democrat Representative Ayanna Pressley talks about the Great Replacement Theory. Let's talk about the Great Replacement Theory, shall we? Let's go to clip 11 now.
Sedate you and the public watching at home, because it's foundational to what's happening here. The Great Replacement Theory is a conspiracy that falsely claims that white people are being deliberately replaced by immigrants and people of color. It is a far-right, white supremacist ideology that far too many Republicans believe is real.
Do they believe it's real because they've been to Costco recently? Do they perhaps believe it's real because of the statistic reality bearing that out? Why do they think it's real if it's so fake and ridiculous? You know, this is what I'm talking about. We don't have to convince them. They're not able to be convinced. We do not need to be going around in circles with Ayanna Pressley or Adam King or anybody else who wants us to debate whether or not we should be subject to, in one case, foreign takeover of our entire government. In another case, the foreign takeover of our very people and our own genocide being carried out right in front of everybody. We don't need to debate that fact. Okay? It's take like that famous scene from Black Lives Matter, a fiery but peaceful protest. The guy standing in front of the burning auto zone saying, actually, everything's peaceful here. That's basically our world now. That's basically where we're at across the board. So I guess whether or not we can actually just see things for ourselves, establish patterns in our own minds, Or do we need to convince Ayanna Pressley to admit that white people are being targeted for eradication, that the Great Replacement, it's not just real, it's a UN project that they are proud of, that it's borne out statistically. Like, do we need to convince her before we do something about it? Why? Why? Doesn't make any sense. They're just lying, so just we can just ignore them and just do what's necessary to reclaim our country from them. So what are we doing? Why aren't we doing that? It's all like this. It literally everything is like this. Because like right now we have all this turmoil in the Pentagon. Now there's been turmoil in the Pentagon for the entirety of Trump's second administration, right? Why has that been the case? That's been the case because apparently the point of Trump's second administration was to get America into war with Iran. However, Donald Trump got elected on an anti-war platform, and he brought a bunch of people with him that believed in that sentiment. And so now they've had to sort of systematically eradicate all of those people, systematically purge all of the actual genuinely anti-war, or at the very least anti-stupid, retarded, suicidal war, purge all of them systematically. And it's been going on for a long time. And, you know, Signalgate helped. That was one of the things where you had Mike Waltz, Israeli traitor, infiltrator, send the signal messages from Pete Hegseth and J.D. Vance about the bombing in Yemen to his fellow Zionist at the head of the Atlantic. That became a big scandal and people were purged for that. Not Mike Waltz, the guy who did it. He got promoted to UN ambassador in addition to being caught talking to Netanyahu behind the scenes in secret before the negotiations with Trump. Something, again, I think we can all consider treason if we're being honest. So let's be clear, okay? This is sort of the frustration with all of this, is I can sit here and I can read article after article after article puzzling out what exactly is happening in the Pentagon. Because if you don't say the obvious thing, you got to come up with all this other crap. Again, a consistency, a consistent theme throughout all of our shows, right? If you talk about anti-Semitism, you don't have to do a psychological profile on the person. You don't have to investigate their deeper meaning and try to identify what is driving this person. When the person is like, I don't like that Israel bombs children, that's fine. That's a sufficient reason. You don't need to go looking for any other reason. So when you're looking at the Pentagon shakeup, the obvious, immediate, the elephant in the room is patriotic American soldiers don't want to go to war for a foreign state, so they're being removed. Okay? All the other crap, all the other noise, all the other internal dissension and the drama behind it, it's not real. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have an effect on anything. It's like when I was going on about how you could describe the Iraq War without ever mentioning 9/11. There's a glaring omission from most of the reporting about the Pentagon, which is that it's all because Israel is systematically taking over the United States government. They really already have taken over the Congress and the Senate. Clearly, the executive has been sold to them for a certain price. And now they're going for the military and the intelligence arms. And you've got Section 219 and you've got Section 622 combining our military forces and our intelligence agencies into one form. And anybody in the Pentagon that was against the war in the Middle East, that was against the Iran war, that was providing alternative intelligence that shows they weren't in danger of getting a nuclear weapon or anything else, they've been purged. They've been systematically removed from any position of power so that the Zionist program can continue unabated. It's not that complicated. It's not that dramatic. There's nothing to look into to figure out what the hell's going on here. It's pretty simple. Actually, it's a takeover. Now, the irony is, Dan Driscoll, supposedly, the story is that Dan Driscoll brought up his concerns about the Iran war and the way they were going to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump basically didn't even acknowledge what was said. Like, I'll find the quote here in just a second. So Dan Driscoll has been removed. He's the latest. Dozens of career military men have been removed from their positions throughout this entire time. Again, always pretty much for the same reason. And the person that they're going to put in charge or talking about putting in charge, first of all, they say former IDF volunteer Brian Mast has been shortlisted to lead the U.S. Army. So Brian Mast, an IDF soldier, volunteer IDF soldier, who wears his IDF uniform in Congress, is on the short list to lead the United States military. Now, I want to say again, maybe I should find the book. There's a book about the beginning of Hezbollah called Warriors of God. It's very interesting, and everybody should read it. But throughout it, just like reading Rise and Kill First, the book about the Mossad assassinations, you almost have to marvel at the ability of Israel to do things like take over militaries of other countries. There was a time period in Lebanon where the Lebanese army itself had entire brigade, I'm not sure what it was, but, you know, like a big portion of their army was in the command of an IDF soldier. Now, they wore Lebanese uniforms. The Lebanese people paid for the army. They're ostensibly, theoretically, taking orders from the Lebanese government, but the whole time, the leader of this brigade is actually an IDF operative, secret agent, who's taking orders directly from Tel Aviv. And you just go, this is incredible. They didn't even have to provide their own army. They got the Lebanese army to provide them with the brigade under the Lebanese flag. They're just taking orders straight from Tel Aviv. I mean, it's crazy how they do this. So they're just doing it here. So it's just like, okay, let's get the Israeli guy to be in charge of the American military. Why would we allow that? It is complete madness. So, obviously, you know, Brian Mast got to be the congressional delegation that went down to Venezuela along with Randy Fine. So, you know, do you think that's because they were the most qualified? Do you think that's because they are respected statesmen in America? No, Randy Fine he's a freshman. It's his first time in American Congress. He's got no sway, no, you know, gravitas when it comes to actually being a congressman. Was there nobody in the American Congress who's even Hispanic, let alone connections to Venezuela? Somebody with Venezuelan ancestry or something? Maybe they could go down as a representative of America's? No, of course. It has to be the two most Zionist members of Congress. They get to go down to Venezuela. See, I don't think they're pretending anymore. I think this is sort of the coming out party of the Zionist Jewish superstate. And basically around the entire world, everybody representing America in any position of supreme power is an Israeli puppet. From John Ratcliffe to Marco Rubio to Kushner to Steve Witkoff, Brian Mast and Randy Fine as the delegation to Venezuela. They're all a part of the clique. It's not that sophisticated or complicated. It's just a takeover. Okay? I'm against that. Me? I'm against our country being run by a bunch of ethno-supremacist psychopaths. So, you know, that's where I stand on all this. Now, the other person rumored, reportedly, to be taking over in one of these positions is a man named Hung Cao. Now, look. All I'm saying, I don't know if China has a bunch of John Smiths running their military. Hung Cao might be a great, can you anglicize it a little bit? Hung Cao, really? I'm not trying to be mean here, but do you know what that sounds like in English? Can we call you Hugh? Can we call you Hugh? How about Hugh Cartwright? How about you anglicize to Hugh Cartwright? So I don't have to giggle every time I say Hung Cao has been serving in an active capacity since John Phelan left the post in April. I don't know. It's just like, we have some white guys. Can we get some white guys back in the office, please? Paging white men. Can we please take over our military again? Again, no offense to Hung Cao. I'm sure he's a great guy, but like, come on. Just what do you think China is thinking when they see this? Like, what would you think if China was like our new Secretary of the Navy? You know, a Jennifer McDonald, you'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? call me an American. I have the feeling that there are just like, you know, dudes that they're, you know, I know people who are still in the Society of the Cincinnati. Do you know what that is? That's descendants of George Washington's officer corps. They're still around. These guys are still around. They trace their lineage directly back in the male bloodline to one of General George Washington's top commanders. And they're still here, and they're still in the army. Can we just give it to those guys? I'm kind of over the merit thing. I just don't want merit anymore. I don't want to hear about it. I just want people who have generations of loyalty to this country and nowhere else. Because I know how absurd it is when people accuse me of dual loyalty, when people accuse me or Alex Jones of wanting America to fail, when these people are dual loyalty, dual citizenship foreigners. It's like, how about we just have people who don't have anywhere else to go, who don't have an escape route, who don't see America as a temporary, you know, market to exploit. How about we just get people whose families have been in here for, been in this country for seven or more generations, and just they get all the top spots? Can we do that? Can we start with that and just see where it goes from there? I think this whole, we're going to go by merit. Oh, whoops-a-daisy. Every bank is in the hand of Jews. Every big tech company is in the hand of Indians. And apparently our military is in the hands of an Asian guy. And it's just like, this isn't merit. That's not what's happening here. This is deliberate exclusion of white guys. And I'm kind of just sick of the whole damn thing, personally. We'll be back on the other side with a very special interview about the Oklahoma City bombing and the false flag that represents. I'm very excited for this because I got a special sneak preview of the documentary that Tucker Carlson Network is coming out with, and it is a fantastic production. I'm really blown away by it. I can't wait for you to see it as well, and I can't wait to speak to Margaret Roberts about it. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. The summer mega sale is ending tonight. You're running out of time to get your absolutely free bottle of Shilajit gummies. No matter what you order at thealexjonesstore.com, you're getting an absolutely free bottle of Shilajit gummy only until midnight tonight. Don't wait. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And we'll be back on the other side with Margaret Roberts. Don't go anywhere, folks.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Debate continues.
And we ain't gonna sit there while Democratic Socialists run their revolution.
You fell for Democrat op?
No!
But this time, we've included some of the biggest voices in the movement. How did a once-unified coalition with a stated goal of making America great again come to a place where some of the most powerful voices in the movement are now leaving?
Don't have a good way of establishing regime change.
Your entire position requires on telepathy.
That's ridiculous.
Who has caused the MAGA divide?
And you've got people on the right saying, we're no longer supporting the guy that got us here. That we're never really there to begin with.
It should have been for America first.
Raise your hand if you've ever been paid to post content that would benefit a foreign nation.
Trump has said his entire political career, no nuclear weapon for Iran.
This war is going to devastate our economy, and Israel's sitting back laughing about it.
What the hell are you talking about?
And if Will is going to say that, well, this isn't as bad as Vietnam yet, that's not the way we should be analyzing a conflict the United States is in.
In the intelligence community, we assess two things, intent and capability.
This is the exact mistake Israel made in the run-up to October 7th.
Are flawed cameras a serious threat to American citizens' right to privacy?
It was a non-issue until they started using it to round up illegals.
You especially, Will, don't have to be concerned, right? Because you're a raging Zionist. I have to be concerned.
People are pissed because Trump went...
What the hell do you want to do about it?
I want him to stop what he's doing.
Great.
And wake the fuck
wow,
up.
Wow, what a wonderful plan. I want him to stop.
He's been the best president we've had on immigration in a century. He's the only president to ever meaningfully combat anti-white discrimination.
Those are huge, monumental wins that on their own would have been the defining moments of other presidents' tenure.
It's either he responds to ego or he was wrong.
Should we vote Republican? If there's a candidate that I don't think is honoring the vision that I want for the country, no.
God.
Why hasn't Trump called and apologized to him?
These were his supporters.
Until they weren't.
You guys have been...
Alex, you called for him to be 25th. You did it twice.
The overall goal is to figure out exactly what we're going to do after President Trump.
This idea that you're going to create something that is more authentically America first than what Trump has been able to deliver is just false.
So you had to spend political capital, which is all the more reason why it shouldn't have been spent on Iran.
We were with a bombastic president who's like a used car salesman sometimes.
Well, sorry!
Said, hold on.
How many times have you predicted World War III now?
We're in World War III.
It is not World War III.
We are not the ones that have been doing World War III alarmism forever. That's actually been done about Iran and a nuclear weapon for decades.
You sound like a leftist.
There is an America after Trump.
Well, I want to say this is the most hardcore debate ever. Oh, but airs before we all die in nuclear war.
Walk away, the great MAGA divide, MAGA versus America first. That will be premiering tonight on Walk Away, their YouTube channel at Real Walk Away, on Rumble as well at Real Walk Away tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time. So just as soon as this program ends, you can hop on over to the Walk Away channel on Rumble and YouTube. That's what I'll be doing. I'm very excited to watch this debate. I didn't get to see it. We didn't get to stay and watch. I was there, but we left before they started arguing, and all I've heard is rumors, and I, apparently it was an explosive contest that I'm very excited to see, and I encourage our audience, of course, to support Brandon Straka and his walkaway movement. Another guy that, and look, you can trust me or not, I think I've been in this sphere for long enough that I would hope that my, you know, instincts are finely honed by this point. I'll tell you, some people you hang out with, you just go, this guy's the real deal. He's just honest, trustworthy. He's just upfront about things. And Those are the people that I want to be associated with. Brandon Schrock is one of them. So I really do encourage you to go watch the walkaway debate tonight as soon as this show's over. But stay tuned because we'll be back in just 90 seconds with a great interview with Margaret Robertson, Scooter Downey. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you go to Freedom RX, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed 3. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait till we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. But now it's ready. There's so many incredible things. The very best testosterone, energy, muscle, libido, mood, sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, all the good peptides, the NAD, all of them. HIPAA compliant, your health information is 100% protected. They got everything. Go there now, and it supports this broadcast with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, War Room Live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Please do share those links and make sure you're following us on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. You can follow at AJ and Live, at Real Alex Jones. And, of course, you can follow us on Rumble, rumble.com/The War Room Live. Starting tomorrow, folks, you will be able to watch a new documentary by the Tucker Carlson Network at tuckercarlson.com. It is an explosive expose about the Oklahoma City bombing. I got early access to the first episode, and it is a masterpiece. It truly blew me away with the level of production that they're doing. And, of course, we always want to encourage people on the right wing to really step up their production level. And, boy, the Tucker Carlson Network is showing you all the way. So I'm very happy to be talking to some of the people involved. But first, let's watch the trailer. Again, this comes out tomorrow, tuckercarlson.com. It's a new documentary about the OKC bombing, the real story, the unauthorized story. Let's watch.
I had become very frustrated with Tim because the story that he was telling me, I did not feel was the truth.
Why don't you believe me?
There are lots of reasons why I don't believe you.
The witnesses, all of them, are telling a different story. It's two guys, not one guy.
I lost my grandchildren in the Oklahoma City bombing on April 19th, 1995. I began to have questions as the days rolled along, and I began to investigate. And I'm still investigating some 30 years later.
I never started out to solve the Oklahoma City bombing. But every trail I followed to my brother's murder went to Oklahoma City.
Sergeant Yankee, he was crying and he said, they're not telling the truth about what's going on down there.
How would the truth help me?
We spoke with survivors, investigators, law enforcement officers, even Timothy McVeigh's own defense attorney. And we re-examined the evidence and revisited one of the most consequential events in this country's history. Watch the OKC Bomb Files. It's streaming exclusively on TuckerCarlson.com.
The OKC Bomb Files. That's the official trailer. The documentary comes out tomorrow. And I'm joined now by two people involved in the production. Margaret Roberts is a prize-winning investigative journalist and television producer. She graduated from Northwestern University and earned a master's degree with honors in English literature at the University of Chicago. In Washington, D.C., Roberts was a top editor at the National Journal and Congressional Quarterly before moving into television as news director of America's Most Wanted. In 2010, Roberts edited the prison memoir Deadly Secrets, which is Timothy McVeigh's account of the Oklahoma City bomb plot, as told to fellow death row inmate David Hammer, an exclusive source for Blowback. Her book is called Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. You can get that on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Again, Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. You can also follow them on X at Blowback Book and blowbackbook.com. And that book serves as the basis for the new investigative documentary from the Tucker Carlson Network, which Scooter Downey helped to head. He's a filmmaker, editor, writer, and a producer based in Nashville. You can follow him on X at Scooter_Downey. And again, the website to watch the documentary or just the trailer you just saw, tuckercarlson.com. With that long intro, welcome both of you to the show.
Great to be with you, Harrison.
Well, I'm very happy to have both of y'all here. Let me start with Margaret. What got you involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Were you interested in it before you edited Timothy McVeigh's account, or was that the first time that you really started looking into this?
Harrison, it was really America's Most Wanted, which if we have to sort of go back through the mists of time here to the early 1990s. But I helped launch that show, which was a crime-solving juggernaut, revolutionary television at the time. And as the news director, I worked hand-in-hand with the FBI on the biggest manhunts in America. So just cutting to your question, how did I get interested? I moved on to L.A., and a few years later, the bomb, the horrific bomb in Oklahoma City that still stands as America's deadliest domestic terror attack, exploded in the middle of the week, in the middle of the country. And it was, from the jump, a manhunt that has been largely forgotten until Scooter's brilliant documentary. That's
downtown.
What piqued my interest.
Sorry, I had a little audio mix up there, but okay, so that's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I was around in the 90s, and America's Most Wanted was a juggernaut. I mean, it was really a cultural phenomenon, and it had, because it would have these reenactments of the crime, so it got attention to them, but then that attention would turn into spotting of the suspects, and then you would actually solve cases that way. And yeah, so the first episode that I got a little sneak preview on, totally mind-blowing stuff, really well done, very emotional. It's a very emotional documentary. And Scooter, as you're approaching this topic, obviously, you know, we get accused because we're sort of truthers on most things. We don't think we're getting the official story, whether it's the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, anything in between. We want to look at it with a skeptical eye. And people want to act like that is disrespectful to the victims of these bombings. But nobody's saying this was fake. Nobody's saying nobody died. I mean, how do you approach that, and how do you manage sort of the balance between, you know, wanting to respect and honor the victims that died from this, but also asking very sort of pointed questions about, you know, what brought all of this about? Was that difficult for you to a tightrope for you to walk?
Absolutely. I certainly wanted to honor and respect the victims and the victims' families. And I can completely understand if your position is, hey, we got the guys responsible and I would like to move on and feel a sense that justice has been done. However, one of the victim's family members that is featured in the trailer and in the documentary in the first episode, Kathy Sanders, she's been asking questions for 30 years. And I think as far as conspiracy theories go, it's important to remember that the government charged Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols with conspiracy. It was a conspiracy charge to, you know, commit mass murder. And in addition to that, the question is really just how far did the conspiracy extend?
Right.
And I think this is a case that's very documented that there were others involved. In fact, in the indictment of Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, it says conspired together with, quote, others unknown to the grand jury.
Right.
And so this series is looking into who those people might be. And the first season of the show is this first three episodes. And we're really looking at John Doe 2 and other John Does that were cited.
That's right. The John Doe 2. And like most cases of, you know, big events like this, you go to the official story and it seems airtight. I mean, they'll tell you they know everything. They know how I got from A to B and da, da, da. And you really have to like start looking for little cracks and noticing things and eventually start pulling on some strings and the whole thing collapses. But I guess I want to ask both of y'all and we can start with Margaret. What was the first thing what was the chink in the armor? What was the crack that made you go, I don't think we're seeing everything that we're being told. Was there one instance or one event or one John Doe 2? Was that the one that, was that the thing that made you start asking questions? What was the first thing that made you ask questions about this event?
Absolutely. So let's, for those who may not know John Doe 2, this was the suspect in the bomb truck with Timothy McVeigh when he delivered that devastating bomb that blew up these 9-story federal building in Oklahoma City. So 24 eyewitnesses on the ground in Oklahoma City saw John Doe 2 with Timothy McVeigh on the bombing run. And surveillance video cameras captured the two of them, captured them getting out of the bomb truck before that devastating blast. So as I was saying, that this was a manhunt, a very high profile manhunt from the jump. And after Timothy McVeigh was taken into custody 2 days after the bombing, there was a $2 million reward for the capture of John Doe 2, who quickly disappeared into the mists of, you know, D.B. Cooper and other,
right,
other phantoms of American crime. But that was for me, because I had been running coverage of the biggest manhunts in the country alongside the FBI. I watched this and kind of made my head spin. Who is John Doe 2 and where is he?
Right. And you had the different, you know, two different police sketches that both, you know, looked a lot like each other. I mean, there was a John Doe 2. They said it first and foremost. This isn't something y'all came up with later on. Kind of a glaring issue with the official story, this disappearing man. Scooter, was that the same for you? Was it this disappearing second man, or what made you want to sink your teeth into this case in particular?
I was contacted by a man named Jesse Trinadue, who his brother was found dead in his jail cell in Oklahoma. And Jesse has been trying to solve his brother's murder for over 30 years, and in the process realized that there might be a link between the Oklahoma City bombing and his brother's death. Mm-hmm. And so Jesse told me his story, and I initially, you know, you get, at the time I was working at Fox with Tucker, and you get a lot of cranks calling you. So I initially thought, this guy is crazy, but found out he was not. He, in fact, is a lawyer. And so he's been able to fight this battle to uncover some of those surveillance videotapes. For example, he's been involved in a lawsuit to get those made available to the public. And so that was kind of my first entry point in. And then I read a book called Aberration in the Heartland of the Real by Dr. Wendy Painting that goes into the subject, and then Margaret's book as well later on. And yeah, certainly in John Doe 2, I think, is one of the most, you know, conspicuous examples of others unknown. And we go into detail on why the FBI said that they would stop looking for this individual, which they said was a case of mistaken identity. But he was seen by over 24 eyewitnesses on the day of the bombing, and more than that in the days and weeks leading up to him. And they had similar descriptions of this man. He had a tattoo on his arm. He had a thick neck, which is a very particular thing to say about somebody. And also that he was dark complected. Perhaps he was not, sometimes he's described as a white man. Sometimes they describe him as American Indian or Pacific, you know, Hawaiian, or possibly Middle Eastern or Hispanic. The ethnicity is ambiguous. And so with the amount of eyewitness accounts, it's very clear this individual did exist, and where he is now is a total mystery.
And I remember from the first episode, he's sort of consistently referred to as having a bodybuilding type physique. So it's not like this would be easy to confuse with somebody like Timothy McVeigh, who was sort of rail thin, and you don't have multiple people saying the same thing about a person, you know, that he was a bodybuilder, really muscular guy. Very, very suspicious. And he just sort of disappears. I know spoilers. Do we find out who that guy is? I mean, do we ever get an ID? It feels like that is sort of the missing puzzle piece here. If we just had that guy's identification, everything else maybe falls into place. Is this guy just a ghost? Maybe no spoilers, but I mean, can y'all give me, do you have any idea who he is? Do you maybe give me your best guess? Margaret, do you know?
Well, let's, hitting ahead now, and this is presented very masterfully by Scooter as a mystery. So, yeah. That would be later, a later chapter.
All right. Don't give anything away
from my.
Don't give anything away. I watched the first episode. I want more. I want to know what comes next. Sorry to interrupt, but.
But here's a clue, Harrison. Here's a key clue, and it involves Jesse Trinadu, who Scooter was just introducing, the brother of this murdered prisoner. That eventually the linchpin of this investigation that I've been involved in side by side with Jesse for 20 years is the surveillance videotape I was mentioning before, because the FBI collected video of John Doe 2 and never showed it to the jury, never showed it to the grand jury, to the trial jury, and never showed it to the American public, and now has fought tooth and nail for almost for a decade and a half against Jesse Trinadu in a landmark FOIA lawsuit to force the disclosure of that videotape, which could either identify John Doe 2 or lead to his identification. Mm-hmm. And eventually, through twists and turns, I will go this far, because I think after 20 years, maybe I'm allowed to have this theory. And it is the theory that Jesse Trinadu espouses as well. It is certainly possible, given the pushback from the FBI on that videotape, that the second man in the bomb truck was somehow associated with the FBI, some kind of an operative, some kind of an asset. And that is why, perhaps, his identity has been hidden all these years.
And it is amazing how they can keep these things under wraps, even with all the FOIA, you know, laws that have been passed and everything else. I mean, we're 30 years on of this attack, and we still don't have all the answers, which I guess sort of leads to my next question. Scooter, do you think something like the OKC bombing would have happened differently if it happened today? I mean, obviously with social media and things spreading around. I mean, how important was sort of the media landscape at the time in order to contain this story? Like, if there was a John Doe 2 in the Charlie Kirk assassination, we would have never stopped hearing about it, right? It's a different world today than it was in the 1990s, where if the mainstream media wasn't talking about it, it kind of didn't exist. Did you think about that very much? And how do you think it would have played out differently if it would have happened today? Would have been more difficult for them to have, well, for whoever it was to have pulled this off?
I think so. And I think a big part of it would just be that I don't think the public would buy it at all, you know, from the get go. And, you know, I think at the time, Margaret, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think there was polls that were done at the time that people did believe that there were more, that there were others involved, mainly because of this John Doe 2. Certainly with all of the video cameras and cell phones, there would be more evidence that would not be able to be suppressed. Although if you look at the Charlie Kirk shooting, there's plenty of cell phone videos and there's still, you know, theories, you know, around his death. And so,
it doesn't always lead to clarity, you know, more voices.
Correct. Yes. Having more video doesn't always, yeah, exactly, lead to more clarity. But I think it would have been very, very difficult for John Doe 2 to not be, you know, have several different cell phone cameras on him pretty quickly.
Right. Well, what do you think, Margaret? How would have social media have impacted, you know, the fallout of this attack?
I 100%. It would, like so many of the stories that have been told and retold, the magic bullet and JFK and onward, yeah. This would not have been accepted. But I will mention there were brawls and intimidation, heavy intimidation of witnesses and whistleblowers and journalists.
Right.
Who tried to bring this story forward. That's actually part of the record of my book. And it started inside the grand jury before it ever indicted McVeigh, Nichols, and the others unknown. One of the grand jurors went rogue and accused the federal prosecutors of hiding the identity of John Doe 2 and asked the judge to investigate and perhaps name a new jury. And the judge kicked him off the jury, which he had violated grand jury rules, but never seemingly investigated that very serious charge of jury tampering. And there were other whistleblowers. We don't have time to go into them. I hope folks will, you know, find the details in my book Blowback and will be learning some of this from Scooter's documentary. But one more notable example is when Roger Charles, a member of the ABC News team that had done a very high profile story, which was kind of a setup story in front of the McVeigh trial in 1997. He got onto a federal informant who had been embedded inside the bomb plot in this right-wing enclave known as Elohim City.
Right.
And had warned her federal handlers that an attack was coming and Oklahoma City was on the short list, and they ignored her warnings. ABC, under heavy pressure from the Justice Department, killed that story on the day of its scheduled broadcast. So it's not like nobody tried to get to the truth, but there was a heavy stonewall from the get-go. This was 3 months before the Timothy McVeigh trial. Her name, the informant, was Carol Howe, and the Justice Department turned around and prosecuted her on flimsy terror charges, criminal charges. A jury threw them out pretty quickly. And then she went another step to try to tell the story and volunteered to be a witness at Timothy McVeigh's trial to tell about overhearing and spying on this plot inside Elohim City. And the Timothy McVeigh trial judge barred her as a witness and said that what she had to say was, quote, not sufficiently relevant.
Wow. Yeah. So it almost seems like they were just so much more heavy handed back then. I mean, they would just straight up threaten you or send you to jail, or people. I mean, a lot of people in this case, close to this case or had questions about this case, ended up with some very suspicious deaths. I know y'all get into that in the documentary too. Can y'all stay with us for the rest of the hour? Cause I'd love to get into some of the details of OKC. I know our audience is probably well versed on it, so I'd like to get into some of the nitty gritty with y'all if you can stay.
Love to.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. And again, the book is called Blowback, blowbackbook.com, blowbackbook on X is where you can follow Margaret Roberts. And you can, of course, get the book on Amazon, Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. And I love that. I mean, your record of journalism is obvious to me. You know, I wasn't trained as a journalist, and I just want to jump in. I'm like, okay, so, you know, John Doe 2, what is he? And you're like, well, hold on, back up. Let's do the who, what, when, where. Who is John Doe 2, and what did he do? So thank you for that, Margaret. I appreciate the journalistic integrity you're bringing to our program so people know what the hell we're talking about. But I think our audience is pretty well aware of what's going on. So we'll get into some of the more details. I've got my own theories I'd love to run by y'all. Again, my guests are Margaret Roberts and Scooter Downey. You can follow Scooter on X at Scooter_Downey. And the website or the documentary comes out tomorrow on TuckerCarlson.com. It's the OKC Bomb Files, an unofficial history. And are all three episodes coming out tomorrow or just the first one?
Just the first one, and then 2 weeks later, episode two, and then 2 weeks later, episode three.
Well, I saw the first one a couple days ago, and I'm already eagerly awaiting the second episode, so I encourage everybody to go watch it tomorrow when it comes out. Go share the trailer today, and we'll be back on the other side with more from Margaret Roberts and Scooter Downey. Don't go anywhere, folks.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments.
We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have this system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live on the Alex Jones Network. I do want to ask you quickly to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Tonight, the Super Mega Summer Sale ends. So if you want to get an absolutely free bottle of Shilajit gummies with whatever you purchase, you got to go today. It ends at midnight in just a few hours. Every order above $99 gets a free tub of beef tallow. So if you order something over $99, you're getting the Shilajit gummies and the beef tallow absolutely free. Of course, it's even cheaper if you're a VIP member. And you're getting 50% off methylene blue tincture as part of this mega summer sale. It ends tonight at midnight central time. So do not wait. Get your free goodies and your amazing supplements or merchandise at thealexjonesstore.com. Help us stay on the air and continue this fight that Alex Jones has been fighting since the mid 90s when the event that we're discussing today took place. My guests are Margaret Roberts and Scooter Downey. They worked on the new Tucker Carlson documentary that drops tomorrow. It's called The OKC Bomb Files, and you can watch it at TuckerCarlson.com. It's based on the book Blowback by Margaret Roberts, blowbackbook.com, or you can follow her on X at blowbackbook, and you can get it on Amazon. It's called Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. Of course, our audience, hopefully if they've done their research, you know, a lot of people sort of woke up during COVID. You got decades to go back, folks, and look over some of the false flags and the mysterious events that have shaped our world. In the mid-90s, it was Elohim City and Waco and Ruby Ridge and the Oklahoma City bombing. And these things, in my opinion, were not disconnected. We're not unconnected. We're actually a part of the same sort of overall operation being carried out at the time to demonize the militia movement and gun owners and all this other stuff. Margaret, let me ask you. Margaret Roberts, the author of blowbackbook.com. Did either of those events come up, Ruby Ridge or Waco, as you were investigating this? I believe, if I remember from the documentary, Waco, the bombing of Oklahoma City was on the anniversary of the Waco attack, right? And that was sort of ostensibly what inspired Timothy McVeigh, at least in part, to set off the bomb in Oklahoma City.
Absolutely. Of the Oklahoma City bombing was 2 years to the day after that disastrous siege in Texas, in Waco ended with, you know, another terrible body count and children as well killed there as they were in the Oklahoma City bombing. So the history of, you know, anti-government extremism, which was red hot in the early 1990s, plays a key role in the bombing. Yeah. I might mention that, and this is one of the incredible achievements of Jesse Trinidu, Scooter introduced, the brother of the murdered prisoner. Jesse Trinidu, in his first FOIA lawsuit, where he theorized about what was going on in Elohim City, uncovered the role of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which I know Alex Jones has covered and, you know, and been entangled with for quite a long time. But that sits as really a powder keg that is still not fully disclosed because Jesse's lawsuit forced the redacted documents to be disclosed, detailing what exactly was the role of the Southern Poverty Law Center. But there were definitely informants there inside Elohim City. So that's a particularly relevant thread, I think, Harrison, to what might interest you about this, the beginnings of this story.
Well, absolutely. And I, you know, there's so many threads to this. I totally blanked on that. I totally forgotten that one. But of course, and the SPLC is under fire right now. And, you know, paying people to go infiltrate groups is nothing new to them. They've been doing it for 30 years, which is why Alex was able to sort of predict, hey, I think, you know, the SPLC is pushing a lot of this racist stuff. It's because he understood, you know, their activities since the mid-90s. That's right. There's so many connections like that that I forget that are still, you know, just as pertinent now as they ever were.
They come right to the current moment. And you have to say, and I have said, and, you know, to the appropriate authorities, if you have to look at what was the FBI's role in these more current activities of the SPLC based on what Jesse uncovered, that they were working hand in glove together on a surveillance operation of Elohim City in the run-up to the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, and they've been sort of hand in glove working with each other before that and ever since. And as you were doing research, or Scooter, maybe this is a question for you, because, I mean, this documentary, it was obviously a work of passion. As somebody who's an editor myself, I mean, you know, I a lot of times I'll put on a documentary and then I go do something else, or I'm working on folding laundry or whatever. This one I could not take my eyes off of. Honestly, it's like the whole thing is this like visual masterpiece, and it's so fast paced. And as an editor, I'm sitting there going, this took a lot of work. This was a passion project for you, I'm sure, whoever edited it. they went above and beyond, and obviously going out and getting the interviews that you got, no small task. This is a really impressive production overall. As you were going out and researching and talking to people, did you find any new information that you hadn't heard before? Because we just, and real quickly, we had a caller last week who had seen stuff before Columbine and was like telling us that he found propane tanks outside of Columbine. And he's like, I've never told anybody. And you think, you know, 30 years on, you're not going to get any more information, but there's stuff out there. Did you discover anything like totally new going out there that you hadn't heard and hadn't been reported anywhere? Or just what struck you as something that was surprising as you did the filming for this?
Thank you. And yes, it was a labor of love, and it's still ongoing. So just so your audience knows, these first three episodes are what we're calling season one. And so there will be 9 episodes in total, and season 2 and 3 will be released next year. So I'm not done. I'm still pounding the pavement and trying to pursue leads. I mean, it's 30 years later. And so I do feel a sense of like historical priority to try to get some of these eyewitnesses, you know, on camera. Possibly for the last time. I did discover something, and this will be, you know, released in episode 2, but I don't think it's been put in any books that I've read. Timothy McVeigh stayed at a motel called the Dreamland in Kansas, and he was there for the 5 days before the bombing. And there was a sighting from two individuals. One was called David King and his girlfriend Connie. David King lived at this motel. He lived in room 24. He saw everybody coming and going. He was very close to the room that Timothy McVeigh was staying in. And at the time, the room next to his, room 23, no one was supposed to have been occupied during this time. No one was supposed to be there. But his girlfriend Connie came to see him one night, and she knocked on the door, and the door next door, the room 23, opened, and this individual who resembled John Doe 2 peeked his head out and kind of looked very threatening. And they ran inside, and they told the FBI this, and the FBI looked into room 23. They discovered that there was no one there. And we found out that the motel kept meticulous phone records of every outgoing call, and you know, to this point, everyone has just said it was a mistaken sighting. But I found that there was a phone call that was made from that room when no one was registered there the following evening. And so I'm actually trying to track down who that call was made to and any more information. From what I've been able to find out, it was to an individual who was a mechanic and worked on buying and selling kind of junker cars. And if you know anything about the story, the buying and using junker cars fits in with the bomb plot. Timothy McVeigh was pulled over in probably the world's worst getaway vehicle. It was a Mercury Mark whose gas gauge didn't even work properly, and he was pulled over without a license plate, and he was speeding. So I don't know what his escape plan was, but if I'm going to, you know, be a criminal mastermind, I'm going to make sure that my getaway vehicle has a license plate on it and is not going to stop working on me as I'm running away from the cops.
Yeah, you would think. And he got caught like that day, right? Or 2 days later. I mean, it was like during he was leaving and a cop just pulled him over randomly because he didn't have a license, because he was speeding. And so when they ID the guy and start sending out, you know, be on the lookout alerts, they get a call. They go, oh, that guy's sitting in jail right now. We have him. We just picked him up. Margaret, as somebody who, you know, worked on America's Most Wanted, I mean, how often does that happen? How often does a highly wanted criminal just accidentally get picked up by police, you know, the day or the day after they commit their crime? I mean, that alone, the coincidence, sort of something you got to explain, right?
That is just one of the utterly boffo moments of this timeline. And we might add to the craziness of the moment that Timothy McVeigh was well armed. And so here comes this trooper to arrest him. And this is 90 minutes after the bomb goes off and 168 people are slaughtered. And he's standing there with a gun. And the question becomes, why didn't he shoot the trooper?
Right.
That's just one of the abiding mysteries of that day.
And in addition to Harrison,
yeah,
there were several, and I would say, I think there were three different eyewitness sightings of the Marquis pulled over with the trooper, and there was a brown pickup truck that was parked in front of the Marquis that pulled over to the shoulder of the highway as well. And that was reported in the news, and I've seen those archival news broadcasts that talk about that brown pickup truck. And this is coming from local law enforcement sources, or I should say law enforcement sources. I'm not sure whether it's local or federal. And, you know, we have dash cam video of the car, but it's after McVeigh has been arrested. And so there is a mystery regarding this brown pickup truck, because a brown pickup truck was seen fleeing from the scene by other eyewitnesses immediately preceding the bombing. And this is something we're going to get into in season three. I'm still looking into the brown pickup truck mystery, but this story, the reason why it became a passion project is every single, this story will just get your grips on you. Everything has a mystery. Nothing is as it seems, even as this, something as simple as where did Timothy McVeigh's license plate go from, you know, because he didn't have one when he was pulled over. No one has ever found that license plate, and there's several different stories about what happened to it, from Terry Nichols' account to McVeigh. So there's so much to cover. That's why I've had to do it in 9 episodes, just to even begin to crack the surface of the story.
Yeah, and that's been my experience studying it as well, and even just showing some of the images that the crew is pulling up, some of the archival stuff, or some of the stuff from Alex Jones's old documentaries. You know, looking at some of this stuff. The sheep dipping, right? The fact that they say that Timothy McVeigh left the Army, but then he's on video still in the Army after that point. Did you get into that much, Margaret, in your investigation? Do you think he was sheep dipped? And for journalistic integrity, to set the table here, you know, the idea that you would pretend that somebody left the Army, pretend they're no longer in an intelligence service when, in fact, they're still taking orders, but they're doing it in a civilian position, right? So, something along those lines. Did you look into that, and what did you discover about Timothy McVeigh's military career?
That's a thread, and Scooter mentioned Wendy Painting and her brilliant book, Aberration in the Heartland of the Real, which is a nod to Don DeLillo's book, Libra. The title, the subtitle of Wendy's book is The Secret Lies of Timothy McVeigh. And she covers, the military connection of Timothy McVeigh better than anybody else. I did not follow the thread that you're referencing specifically about the, him being seen as a soldier after he left. That's a rabbit hole that I haven't found to be convincing, but I also didn't go far enough down it to, you know, to make a judgment. So I don't know. But this idea of the sheep dipping has some credibility, in my opinion. And Timothy McVeigh wrote his sister a letter in which he described being pulled out of his special forces tryout and into a secret government squad where he was going to be doing covert operations. And again, to touch on Wendy's research, she discovered documentation from his first attorneys before Stephen Jones, who is a key figure in Scooter's documentary. But the first lawyers who represented McVeigh very briefly reported that he told them that he was working for the government. So those are, you know, that was a pivotal moment, his first interview with his attorneys to be. And that is a narrative that just vanishes. So I think it deserves some credibility.
Yeah, and I mean, that is the struggle with investigating this stuff. You kind of have to know what to what to focus on and what's, you know, important and what's not. And of course, I think now it's more common. You know, back then, as we were talking about, you know, they would just sort of intimidate people, right? I mean, you got stories. They go, yeah, some dude, you know, with a badge came up and said, stop following this or we'll kill you. I mean, it was pretty much like, you know, they were, because you didn't have social media. If you couldn't get on the local news, nobody would know. Your friends and family maybe, but, you know, what are they going to do? So back then, you know, it was sort of more straightforward. Now it feels as though if they want to cover something up, they have to just create a bunch of theories that aren't real to distract people. And sort of you have the controlled opposition tactics being taken. I wonder, was there anything that you think is not a good theory? Like, is there anything that you discover that people are really convinced this happened and you just go, nah, I don't believe that? Any theories you just totally disregard when it comes to the OKC bombing? I don't know if that might be a hard question to answer, but is there anything that you heard from people that you just go, nah, that's not the case, that didn't happen? Scooter, when you were doing the research, was there anything that you just sort of went, ah, that's a little too far for me, I don't think it was space lasers or whatever it is?
Yeah, Timothy McVeigh is not an alien. I think I'm pretty firmly in that camp. I have tried to avoid theorizing about almost any. I have my own suspicions, but like as far as the documentary goes, I've really tried to just be evidence based and let the audience, you know, do their own theories. I think at the last episode, I'm going to present what are the, you know, potential theories involved. But I would say that the government's theory, I mean, from what I've said, the least conspiratorial theory on, for example, why they didn't pursue John Doe 2 is that the Justice Department was wanting to be constrained. They had their guys and they wanted to get them convicted. And so they didn't want the investigation to become sprawled. And I think at one point they had on their office, do not confuse the case with clutter. So that's almost the least conspiratorial theory. And then beyond that, I'm remaining neutral at this point and trying to just, you know, be open-minded.
Well,
an interesting thing, too, is a lot of these stories, for example, about McVeigh being sheep-dipped, all these stories about McVeigh come from McVeigh himself. He is the origin of all these stories about himself. And one of the things that I found to be very interesting, and we cover this in the first episode and the next two, Timothy McVeigh's story while he was in prison changed according to the government documents that he read. So his story would become closer and closer to whatever the government said the story was. After he would read the FBI 302 interview documents, he would then change his story. So as one example, we get into this in episode two, the purchase of the fertilizer that was used in the bomb. The man who sold the fertilizer to Terry Nichols, who was calling himself Mike Havens, he said that there was a passenger in the car while he was loading the fertilizer in the truck, and that the passenger was not Timothy McVeigh. Well, McVeigh had told his attorney Stephen Jones first that, oh, Terry Nichols dropped me off at the park. But then when he read this document, he said, oh, no, I was there. It was me. And Jones is like, well, the guy says it wasn't you. He's like, no, it was me. So I think I feel pretty firm to say that one of the defense investigators' theories was that Timothy McVeigh was the willing fall guy, that he wanted to protect the identities of his co-conspirators. And so he was willing to go down with the team. Wow. Down as the martyr.
Yeah, no easy answers to any of this. I mean, what a tangled web we weave, right? And yeah, it does seem like little part of this. Go ahead.
Harrison, sorry, just to jump in and with a nod to the power of Scooter's work here, presenting this as a mystery. It's not telling it's a retelling of a story that America thought it knew like the back of its hand, right? But we didn't know this story because of the way the story has been steered. And so now we're setting sail again to investigate what really happened. And just to connect back to where we started about the question about social media and could this happen today, I think we also need to look at the traditional role of journalism. And when I saw Tucker's first announcement, where he says, out of the gate, we are reopening the case, this is thrilling to those of us who have been working on this case for 20 years, because that's what we've been waiting for. That's what we've, and there, this can point toward action. Social media still has to find its way, I believe, to connect to having an impact, right? Yeah. But this documentary, as it's going out and as Tucker says, presenting the evidence, we're not going to tell you what happened, we're going to present the evidence. This is going to be a powerful brief that could wake up the government entities, from Congress to the courts, to the Department of Justice, to get back on the horse and find out, disclose what really happened in America's deadliest domestic terror attack.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's almost like we have, there's a constant deluge of stuff we're trying to deal with on a daily basis, but it's almost like there's this backlog of, you know, 30 years of things that the government's done or misinterpreted or misportrayed to people. And so, you know, it's kind of like, can we, you almost want to start at the beginning and go, look at the tactics they use, look at the way they employ it, why are they doing this? I mean, it can really inform you about what's going on today. And I remember back in probably 2020, I was doing research about vaccines and vaccine injuries, and I came upon this story that there was a vaccine that they gave, I think it was an anthrax vaccine, that they gave to the troops that went over to fight the first Gulf War against Saddam Hussein. And there were a lot of vaccine injuries, and there was a giant trial, and, you know, they were suing over it. And all those files happened to be at the Alfred P. Murrah building, and it all disappeared in a puff of smoke. So there's stuff like that that I'm like, you know, what's the truth behind that? We don't have much time, but I wish we could get into that stuff. Can you tell me quickly, does that appear at all? Have y'all looked into that, or is that, you know, come up in the documentary?
Well, I'll say, as to the idea that they did an explosion to get rid of documents, I never put much credence in that. I will debunk that one, in my opinion, because it just seems like you could just take the documents out. I don't think you need to, like, kill 168
okay,
people.
Yeah, all right, yeah, that's a good point.
You could just shred them. But, that's a good point. You know, there it is the one of the issues with this case is there's tens of thousands of interviews that were done, so many documents. It's the biggest crime scene in American history. And whenever you do that, you're going to be exposing a lot of things that may not even be related to the bombing that still might be nefarious.
Right.
And so there's kind of what's the term where it's leading you down, you know, a wrong path. A red herring. Yeah. I think there's a lot of red herrings in this case, too. But Margaret's book and the other books that have been made have done a great job.
Absolutely. The book is Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing by Margaret Roberts. You can get that on Amazon. And the documentary comes out tomorrow, TuckerCarlson.com.
Alex Jones and his pests have learned more than they were ever meant to know. I will not suffer their continued existence. Girls, you know what to do.
Yes, my queen. Your wish is our command.
Now someone check on my insider trading and get me a martini while you're at it.
Alex, my friend, I have detected hostile frequency on the airwaves. You are in great danger.
Thank you, Victor. We're on red alert. Crew, get to your battle stations now.
We're ready, sir.
Fire away. We got him! Great job, crew!
No, no!
Thank you for coming, Health Ranger. Now let's get to work.
Let's begin the process and prepare for maximum human potential.
power plant and methyl drive, pour them in. Excellent. The formula is becoming more powerful than I ever imagined.
Now, pour in the methylene blue. Yes, let the transformation begin.
Wow, the power drive bundle might be a little much all at once. That thing packs a punch. But seriously, folks, the Power Drive Bundle combines three powerful formulas designed to support energy, mental clarity, and stress resilience. And every purchase helps keep us on the air, fighting for you.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Just blew the lid off Peter Thiel's invitation-only dialogue society. Co-founded by the PayPal and Palantir billionaire back in 2006 with data broker Aaron Hoffman, this off-the-record retreat machine has been quietly packing rooms for nearly two decades with the exact people who write the rules, sitting elbow to elbow with the tech and finance titans those rules are supposed to restrain. The 2026 Dublin gathering list names 222 registrants, NATO's top general, sitting Trump administration officials, U.S. senators from both parties, PayPal mafia heavyweights, intelligence figures, surveillance company founders, and Hollywood sycophants. The agenda offered panels on navigating World War III, battlefield technologies, bring back nuclear, build a cult, and even how's your sex life, complete with matchmaking. This isn't networking. This is the regulated and the regulators breaking bread and who knows what else in the dark.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
And I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that even going beyond Palantir, the internet itself was created by the military, and I think now we're coming kind of close to the end game in terms of full circle of them kind of realizing their initial dream for the internet. And then, you know, in the case of Palantir, you know, I argue in a lot of my research points to various efforts within the DARPA military sphere aimed at the internet being privatized. For example, LifeLog becoming Facebook, Total Information Awareness becoming Palantir. You know, these have become reality. They've been messed. A lot of these big tech Silicon Valley companies, are just masquerading as we just started in our garage and we're regular guys. Like, no, these are guys that were created by military intelligence. And they privatize these programs, and we have willingly given them our data, and we continue to do so.
They're category-defining products. So when you deliver these products to the market, just honestly, people say, this isn't going to exist, this isn't right. valuable, but then it changes the market. And then the market is the Palantir market. Now, that doesn't mean everyone in the world's going to buy our product, but it means most of the sensible people in the world are going to define, buy from the category we defined.
Palantir supplies the citizen tracking data analytics backbone for intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, and law enforcement, while Dialogue hosts the very officials who greenlight those contracts. Now we see the practical application, an elite soiree that grades members by wealth and fame, tracks their relationships with algorithms, and promises absolute secrecy so nothing said ever reaches the public. Add in the earlier Epstein file mentions of Thiel's interest in secret society concepts, and the pattern crystallizes.
Yeah, transhumanism is this, you know, the ideal was this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body.
That is striking on the sort of transhumanist versus Christian thing is how similar they are.
And so I think you can sort of point to metaphysical differences, but the thing that sort of is always striking is you're going to have a transformed body. You know, there's going to be this radical transformation of the way everything works. There will be no more random freak accidents that happen to kill you. And so I think it's actually the similarities that are striking. And then one shouldn't try to overlay some metaphysical difference.
I met Epstein a few times as well, and this was 2014. It was post arrest. You know, you assume he didn't go to jail for that long.
Right.
It was probably not as serious as alleged. There was certainly the illusion through all these other people.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed 3. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait till we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. But now it's ready. There are so many incredible things. The very best testosterone, energy, muscle, libido, mood, sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, all the good peptides, the NAD, all of them. HIPAA compliant, your health information is 100% protected. They got everything. Go there now, and it supports this broadcast with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, third hour is on here on War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Got a lot more news and videos to cover and show you. And I got a video here. You know, it's sort of a common theme, a common genre of video online these days, where you just show, you know, somebody making a statement, and then a couple years later they make a different statement. You know, we want to show people's hypocrisy. And we have a record of what people say, and it's fun to, you know, contradict. We showed one earlier today with the Wall Street Journal or Washington Post, whichever one it was, saying that it was an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that the conniving Jews were responsible for the ousting of Thomas Massie, paired with a video of those very conniving gentlemen saying exactly that. So I've got another one here from Howard Lutnick. It's kind of what I'm talking about, you know, kind of throughout the show, talking about, like, I don't feel like debating with these people because they're just lying. They're just lying a lot of times. So I'm not interested in debating things like data centers and flock cameras because I don't believe you. And I'm not going to try to sit here and, you know, debate the nuances of, well, you know, how many arrested flock cameras get and is it worth it and how much are we paying and is there other it's like, how about we just put our foot down and we just say no. We just say no to all of this crap because you shouldn't have to lie. If these things were good, you wouldn't have to lie. They're not good, so you're lying about them. So let's go to clip 21 here. Jolly old Howard Lutnick always seems to be laughing about something. Here he is laughing about, you know, the absurdity of the idea that data centers take water. What? What a crazy idea. Where'd you get that from? Probably our foreign enemies, if I had to guess. Let's go to clip 21 now.
I mean, data centers don't use water. The data centers, this is propaganda by our adversaries to try to slow us down, right? So think about it. These AI things, they suck water, and they need water, right? And so they need a plumber, but not a plumber.
Look. It's our adversary spreading his propaganda. You know, whoever told you data centers need water, they are your enemy, and that's foreign propaganda. Or really, because you said it. Well, there you go. Well, there you go, actually. Totally consistent, really, if you think about it. So, I mean, how are we supposed to take any of this stuff seriously? Lutnick says data centers don't use water. This is propaganda by our adversaries to slow us down. Lutnick, last year, these AI things suck water. They need water. They need water. all of your water, all of your drinking water. But he thinks it's so funny that anybody thinks it needs water. But we got a problem in America with water. We're running out, actually. It's not going well. We can go to clip 10 here. This is kind of like an existential crisis for us, actually. This is kind of a very big deal, what's happening right now. I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that at the exact same time that farmers can't get fertilizer and the regulations from Biden and then from Trump have crushed the ability of our cattle producers to rebuild the herd, at the same time that they're doing nitrogen restrictions in places like the Netherlands, inspiring farmer protests there, as clearly the government is just arbitrarily targeting the farming industry for destruction on the basis of so-called climate change. I don't think any of this is a coincidence. I think they're destroying our food supply on purpose. I think they want to create the scarcity so they can impose rationing so they can justify their digital currency mark of the beast system. I think it's all a part of a plan, and I think the destruction of our natural waterways are perfectly in line with that plan. Here's clip 10. Here's just one of the looming disasters because we are focused on the wrong things and not actually focusing on the existential problems that are facing us like the barrel of a gun. Let's watch.
Dropping below Power Pool in Lake Powell may be effectively Deadpool.
Lake Powell and Lake Mead, which are the largest reservoirs in the United States, have just hit record low water levels. How alarmed should we be? How alarmed are you?
I've spent my entire career trying to tell people to calm down about water concerns. And in the last 2 years, I've spent my time telling people they really need to get worried. The water levels in Mead have dropped 40% since 2025. We're now 30 feet away from Power Pool in Lake Powell, and it is dropping around 3 to 4 feet a month, which means we are looking at the possibility of reaching Power Pool only in a few months. And what Power Pool means is Lake Powell will stop generating electricity. So we don't know that if we can continue to release water from Lake Powell to Lake Mead, if it drops below that power generating level, which means dropping below Power Pool in Lake Powell may be effectively Deadpool. And Deadpool means no water is moving past the dam. And we're now running into possible risks of reaching Deadpool in Lake Mead, which means no water would move past that dam. And that water supply is what grows 90% of your winter vegetables. We're in a lot of trouble.
90% of your winter vegetables grown with water that's not really there anymore. That's a pretty big problem. I think we could solve, I think we could handle it. You know what takes a lot of waters, a lot of water per capita? Human beings. You know what probably didn't help our water conservation efforts is 100 million bonus human beings on top of the people that are supposed to be here. It really is the fix everything button deportations. I think we could handle the water necessities if we weren't rapidly building tens of thousands of homes to house the tens of millions of people who aren't supposed to be here. I used to say it a lot more, but I think it's worth it to, it's like this phrase, and to me, this like says everything. We are not at replacement level population. Our fertility has crashed, meaning that year over year, theoretically, our population should be shrinking and getting smaller. More people are dying than people being born. At the same time, we are building out neighborhoods around Austin, Texas so fast, the wells are running dry. Now, this is there's an incongruity here. How are we so desperate for houses? How are we so desperate to build these tract homes as far as the eye can see, sucking up all of the underground aquifers and literally leaving it empty? Jacob's Well here, just outside of Austin and Wimberley, used to like gush water, used to be like a geyser. Now it had to be closed for a while because the water level was so low because there's so many new homes tapping into the aquifer. It's draining it dry. So we're building things so fast. We're draining our natural resources to nothing. But it's not with our people, but it's not for our people. It's not for Americans building houses for Americans. It's all foreign birth. I mean, it's just crazy. It's unsustainable. It's ridiculous. We need to expel all of these people, and we need some modicum, some reasonable environmental standards that I would think wouldn't be that hard. But as we're finding out, we're stuck between the left, who are insane idiots and think that environmentalism is like forcing you to sell your gasoline car. That's their idea of saving the planet, is like dictating your life choices while they perform the genuflection or the, I don't know, the pretense of like recycling, like that's doing anything. Yeah, Jacob's Well in Wimberley was flowing rapidly for a short time after July's heavy rainfall. Now the waters are receding again. Yeah, well, we got to build 10,000 new homes for 10,000 Indian families who got here on H-1B visas. So, sorry, I guess the natural wonders of your state will be both unenjoyable because they're crowded and occupied by a bunch of foreigners with no respect for your rule of law or nature itself. And really, it'll just drain it dry so it won't exist anymore anyway. So, can we stop doing that? Let's stop building all of these houses. We don't need them, and they're ugly. And they're for people that don't even belong here. So that's where I would put the focus of my blame. But obviously, things are not just being managed correctly. So we're stuck between the retarded leftists who think that, you know, killing all the cows is environmentalism, and Republicans who think that a natural forest is just an untapped money market. The pristine wilderness that our forefathers left us, that's just a check to cash once and run off into the sunset with. So I would love to see just some basic humanitarian base level, let's preserve the planet, let's actually take account of our resources, and let's not waste them on things that are only destroying us, like the foreign populations that arrived here and or the data centers that are meant to enslave us. Let's not do any of this, would be my preference. Now, we're not getting deportations, obviously, not to any recognizable or tangible degree. But that doesn't mean that ICE isn't being used for other purposes. That doesn't mean that it's not a useful thing to have in your back pocket, this desire for by the American people, the desperate need we have for deportations. It's a vulnerability that unscrupulous psychopaths can take advantage of. You know what I mean? You see what I'm saying? Like if you were trying to poison somebody, you would want them to be really thirsty. You see what I'm saying? So like, we're desperate for deportations. They know that. They're not giving us that, but they are using that desire, that need, that desperation of ours to get the flock cameras and the robot dogs and everything else. They're not actually doing it for deportations, but they're using the drive for deportations. They're just directing it elsewhere, which is very annoying. And we know that they have the capability to arrest people. We know they have the capability to do incredible things, really whatever the hell they want, whenever the hell they want. There was talk, there's rumors that we were going to be digging another strait to go around the Strait of Hormuz. Now, I don't know if that turned out to be accurate, but I'd believe it. I'd believe that America was literally capable of carving out an alternative pathway through the desert for the ocean. We could do it, of course. We've got the manpower. We've got the money. Why not? We could do that. Of course, we cannot expel Kilmar Abrego Garcia for the life of us. He's still here. But sure, dig another Strait of Hormuz to go around the Strait of Hormuz that we closed on purpose. So yeah, why not? Yeah, viral close claimed U.S. dredged a new safe corridor on the Omani side. Little known stretch of water on the Omani side of the Strait of Hormuz is suddenly attracting attention as the Gulf searches for ways to keep oil moving in one of the most serious disruptions to global energy routes in decades. A U.S.-based news and political commentary program, Morse Report, has claimed that recent satellite imagery indicates a covert dredging operation has created a previously unused shipping corridor through Omani waters. So I don't know. Yeah, it could be true. Could not be true. I wouldn't disbelieve it. And I think it's something we're capable of because it doesn't actually benefit America in any possible way. So, of course, it can happen. There's no problem there. It's just the world that we live in. America is more likely to create a canal through the Saudi Arabian desert than it ever is in just like getting the deportations that we actually voted for. It's priorities. And they're choosing their priorities. So let's go to clip eight, because we've got some priorities that the Trump administration is focusing on. Things like getting revenge on behalf of Laura frickin' Loomer and expelling Milo Yiannopoulos. So we only touched on it yesterday because the interview had just dropped. I had time to watch it after the show. And yeah, it was worse than I even thought. Let's go now to clip number eight. This is Milo Yiannopoulos on the Piers Morgan program, where he lays out the very underhanded tactics that were used. I was sort of assuming, I was just like, I can't believe Milo let his green card lapse. Like, what an idiot. That was my take on it, is like, well, you know, if he was going to talk so much crap, he should have made sure his paperwork was on file. Like, what the hell's wrong with this guy? Apparently, that wasn't actually what happened. Maybe even more underhanded than we even previously understood. Here's Milo Yiannopoulos on Piers Morgan yesterday.
So if you have a green card, on what basis have they thrown you out of the country?
They sent notices to an address they knew I didn't live at anymore. Two addresses ago in Florida, almost 10 years ago, in order to get an in absentia hearing, which is basically they show up with a judge, they tell the judge you didn't show up, you didn't respond to the notices, and they ask the judge to give them an order. That's what happened. They had previously cancelled my work permit without telling me. They excluded my lawyer, and the ICE agents who arrested me in Louisiana told me this. I don't know if they were supposed to, but they told me that my lawyer had been deliberately excluded. And I said, well, how do you even know that I have one? He said, because I've got his name and phone number right here, but they didn't send him the notices. And they didn't send you the notices. They sent them to an address you don't live at. When you get served with this stuff from immigration, it doesn't come via FedEx or a process server, you know, like in your hand or anything like that. They just mail it. And if they mail it to an address you don't live at, they can have a whole...
But that may not have been deliberate. That could just be an admin error.
But I'd had notices from the... not just from, you know, some vague immigration-related, a bit of the government. From the precise agency, department, that sent these notices, that had notices at two new addresses. Of course I had, because I've been giving them my address.
Is your green card still valid?
No, because they cancelled it without telling me.
When?
That I don't know. But
in what period of time could it have been cancelled?
Well, it must have been cancelled sometime in the last year, I suppose.
I mean, you presumably... Have you travelled to and from America?
I happen not to have done the last year, but
when was the last time you entered America?
Probably 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
I think so.
And you came from where?
I wasn't here. I think probably Europe. Maybe... I want to say Hungary or...
Okay, but you entered...
I don't recall, honestly. But
you entered not using an O-1 visa, but using the green card?
Right, but they...
Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And you were allowed in?
Yes, and I had my little green card. They took all of those things from me when they arrested me.
How long is the green card valid for?
Well, you can either get it for 2 or 10 years.
What did you have it for?
So I had 2 years, and I was renewing on a two-year basis.
Had that elapsed?
No, it had not. No, I had not. Because look.
So your contention, just to be clear, Milo, is that your green card was still valid at the point that you were deported?
Well, no, because I think they cancelled it without telling me.
In what period of time?
That I don't know yet. I've asked for my complete file. I've asked for my complete records. I don't know if I'll even get them. But everything about what happened was very, very off. And, you know, in my life I've been, you know, called a right-wing conspiracy theorists and all the rest of it. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to try to keep this like as sane and sober as I can.
Well, the point is they'll be watching this interview, so anything you say which they can contradict with evidence, they're likely to do.
Why would I lie? It's going to make it even more difficult for me to get back to see my family, to see my pets,
So what family do you have back in America at the moment? Your wife?
Well, I'm married to an American. I've got dependents. I've got cats. I've got, you know, I've got employees. I have a whole life there. I've been there for 10 years. Everything is there.
You're married to an American woman?
No.
Man? I don't want to pry into your sexuality.
Yeah, I don't.
I know you've... I mean, you're a gay man and you're married to a gay man.
I don't do the sex stuff anymore, but yes.
Okay, I'm only asking because I just want to know what family you have left in America.
Yeah.
Where is your spouse?
Living in the same house at the other end of the corridor.
In which state is this?
This is in California.
In California, in LA?
Yes.
Right.
And so they had to wait until I left California to kind of scoop me up. Mm. And everything about this is peculiar because, you know, the guys who arrested me, they said, they didn't tell your lawyer about this. And they told me the ICE agents that picked me up in Louisiana, they said three of the five notices they sent were returned to sender, address the unknown. So the government knew I wasn't there. Mm. The government knew I wasn't getting these things. It knew that I had no idea what was happening.
So, I mean, I think that's kind of important. They can do these sort of deliberate process errors to check the boxes and go, well, before we can arrest somebody, you know, we got to send them an alert. And it's like, well, do we have to send them the alert to their address, or we can just send it to somewhere and it's their fault they don't get it? This is why I wasn't, you know, jumping on the, you know, bandwagon right out the gate, because you got to understand, if you're going to be targeted by selective enforcement of laws, you don't actually have to do anything wrong. And most of the time, somebody's done something wrong, you can get them on. Somebody's got an expired tag that you can pull them over and then claim that they made a threat. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do. Nobody should be in support of Laura frickin' Loomer dictating who ICE is going after and going after Milo Yiannopoulos by apparently canceling his green card without telling him. And yeah, I don't, the crew was asking me in the break or during the video, I don't understand how he can be married to an American and not be allowed to stay here. I mean, I would think that being married gets you that green. I'm done to get you a green card. I guess he had one, but I don't know. That seems suspicious to me. If he's still legally married in America, would that not prevent him being deported at least so rapidly? I don't know. That's all kind of weird to me. A little bit bizarre to me. But I want to go now to clip number 13. This sort of goes into everything that I've been talking about, where like you gotta be able to see where all this is leading. You've got to be able to understand that like I could, you know, I'm trying to think of a metaphor of like in a small town, you've got a sheriff who just like, he wants to get you on something. He wants to get you on something. And, you know, he finds out that your dog got out of the gate and went and pooped on a neighbor's yard. And so he goes and arrests you for that and charges you. And you're sitting there going, I'm in jail because of this. This is just because the sheriff doesn't like me. The sheriff hates me because I dated his daughter or whatever it is. And he's just coming after me with whatever. And people go, but your dog did poop on the lawn, though. And it's like, okay, but that's not the point, right? It's not, you can't just point and go, well, but he did overstay his visa. Okay, but how'd we get here? And was this discovered as a routine act of, you know, routine police behavior that it was discovered and he got charged? Or was this a targeted arrest? Because that's extremely dangerous. And even if the thing they're being arrested for is technically on paper true, you should still be able to see what happens when you open up this Pandora's box. You should be able to understand where it goes when you start making allowances for your government to start targeting specific people and not others. Start enforcing certain crimes for certain people, but not other crimes for other people. I mean, this is worse than no law at all. It's significantly worse than anarchy. I'd rather have no law whatsoever and the ability to just do whatever I want to whoever I want and, you know, survive by the, you know, sweat of your brow and blood you can make other people shed. Like, I'd rather just have no law at all than basically law doesn't exist except where Laura Loomer wants it to. Law doesn't exist except where it's useful to invoke to shut down political dissidents. It's a very dangerous game they're playing with our laws and with our justice system and with our immigration system and with our free speech. And it's all being justified because it's Donald Trump and people are actually falling for it. And I can't believe they are. Let's go down to clip number 13. This is what you look like if you're cheering for Flock and data centers. Let's watch.
You're scared of Flock cameras? You carry a cell phone with GPS all day. What's the difference? It's not a war. We're just bombing Iran. We need the data centers. We have to win the AI race. Oh, my God. Shut the hell up about Epstein already. Gas costs more? So what? It's worth it if Iran doesn't get a nuke. If you've got nothing to hide, why do you care if they track you? America's finally great again.
It's finally great again. At We Are Forbidden, incredible stuff. They come out with just like a bombshell AI video about once a week. You got to follow them at We Are Forbidden. Was that video real? I really couldn't tell.
are Optimal Human Superfood Greens Gummies, and they've made getting my daily greens so easy. I also love that they come in these convenient individual serving pouches, and each pouch has a full serving of 6 gummies. Mmm. They actually taste really good, and this is such an easy routine to stick with. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.
退屈な午後にザクッと革命。Optimal Human Superfood. Now we are greens, gummies for kids. Yummy, yummy for your tummy. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. Yummy, gummies. Gummies good for you. Cruncho! Hi-ya!
We have to fight for our sovereignty. We have to fight, to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And, I think with the transhumanist agenda, there is a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Where, oh, I've said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, goes, you're fat. You're your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Vaughn, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, but didn't really really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene Blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
Completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key C minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done 3 different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
that. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff but doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If you want to imagine a 15-minute city, just look at Gaza. Gaza is the first, it's the prototype of the 15-minute city. It has AI machine guns mounted above the gates, constant surveillance, the controlled existence, the lack of rights, the lack of prosperity, obviously, the inability to even get sufficient food or water.
Endelic, akol sagol.
Water is something that people understand.
You describe the worst case scenario of prison planet. You're just describing Palestine. They say they want globalism to eliminate war, because without nations, you won't have war. This is what awaits us. You won't have wars between two armies from two nations.
you'll have endless, continuous war on anybody who resists, on anybody who refuses to give in, on anybody who does not willingly submit themselves to the globalist masters. You can't see how what awaits us is already being rolled out in Gaza and Palestine. I guess you'll just have to wait till it's here.
I didn't even intend, I did not even intend for that to be such an appropriate connection between all these other things that we're talking about. Like, what do you need for Prison Planet? You need the surveillance, right? Now, if you're going to do surveillance, you're going to need somewhere to put that data to parse it and to run the AI models. You're going to need, you know, 15-minute city-style restrictions to movement. That'll be made easier once you have the flock cameras everywhere to make sure where everybody is. And then you need the resource scarcity. You need to, you know, everybody understands water. Remember that clip from the World Economic Forum where they were like, well, we didn't get everything we wanted for COVID because it was a little bit vague. It was like the disease is invisible. Do you have it? Do you know? But everybody understands water. Everybody knows what it's like to be thirsty. And when you're thirsty, there's no question about what you need. You need water. So we should control that water. I guess it's just a coincidence that we're also noticing at the same time that the flock cameras and the data centers and the ICE robot dogs are all being established here in America. We're running out of water. What a crazy coincidence, you guys. Or maybe it's that the world elite are literally going to try to kill us all and are just doing it right out in front of us, and we could feel free to notice and resist at any point and they wouldn't succeed. But we continue, and it continues on. I'm going to go to a longer video here that I think is worth it, but I got a couple headlines to read and things to say. I mean, I talked about this yesterday, but they're coming out and saying it again from Reuters.com. Trump aides, fearing a midterm rout, push to keep Iran war quiet for now. Yeah, translation, we know the Iran war is unpopular, so we're not going to talk about it or really do anything to expand it until the midterms are over. Until you vote for us, we won't do the thing that you don't want us to do. Is this a good strategy? I was trying to think of, you know, a metaphor for this, another way to interpret this. It would kind of be like, you know, telling your wife you're not going to cheat on her until she goes out of town. You know what I mean? Where it's like, that's not really the point here, actually. It's like, we're not going to do the thing you don't want us to do until we have the power that we're asking. It's like, I don't like that. I mean, what? It's just like, what? Okay. If the Iran war is that unpopular, you're going to lose the midterms over it, maybe stop doing it. Maybe just actually end the Iran war. But to come out and say, vote for us, then we'll do the Iran war, it's just not the best pitch. To me, not the best pitch. Meanwhile, Trump continues his unbroken streak of doing the exact opposite of what his followers and constituency want. Trump promotes AI data center deal with BlackRock and others. Oh, wonderful. Oh, great. Tell you what, when you get done chopping down the trees at the JFK Center, when you get done insulting all of us for being too stupid to want a data center in our backyard, when you get done not caring about how economically everybody is struggling right now, when you're done telling us that, you know, just all the crap that he's come out with over the last couple of weeks, you let us know. But what the hell? NVIDIA plans to mobilize over $500 billion in dollars in third-party capital for AI infrastructure and support from major financial firms like BlackRock and Goldman Sachs. You know, the good guys. Pretty sure those are the good guys. Trump argues that communities should welcome data centers for jobs and economic growth despite growing opposition over concerns about noise, electricity, and water consumption. But as we know from Howard Lutnick, you know, they don't consume water. I mean, they do require lots of water. I mean, they are just gulping down water at incredible rates, but they don't require water. And then him, of course, telling you you're stupid and killing the golden goose for daring. And, you know, somebody pointed out to me yesterday, and this is kind of another layer of questions I have on top of this. Now, obviously, the internet works pretty well as it is. Now, America has 4,000 data centers, something like that, and we run the backbone and the digital infrastructure for everybody online, right? I mean, it depends a little bit on the website, but for example, something like X, all of their servers are here in the United States. So every Indian person, every Chinese person, every African person that's on X, all of their data exchange is all taking place on American data centers. So for one thing, why are we doing that? Why are we supplying all of this infrastructure for everybody else? I don't even want these people on the internet. I don't even want to interact with people from India on my internet. Why are we supplying it for everybody else? But of course, the internet has consistently grown. The requirements for data centers or server farms has consistently grown along with the internet. Back when it was just email and text, it didn't take a lot of data. Now that we have streaming video and all this stuff, it requires more data. And as the requirements have grown, the data infrastructure has grown commensurate with that. Why we have this sudden jump, despite being 10 times, you know, having 10 times the number of data centers, why are we doing this suicidal pursuit of thousands of more data centers? Why are we allowing our water resources to be consumed in massive amounts to feed these data centers? The obvious conclusion was always, this is so AI can run the surveillance. You need the space to keep all these videos. Then somebody brought up yesterday, and I don't know how I've thought about this. You had to cure cancer, right? Well, you ever been to China? You ever heard of the social credit score system? That's a good idea. One ready for that. That's what the AI is supposed to be used for. That's right. We have to build 10,000. Sorry, we have to eminent domain your childhood home. Natalie Portman needs bigger boobs. I need to make a video of a banana on a skateboard quick. Totally ridiculous. But, okay, that's a reasonable explanation. Why are we pursuing data centers with this suicidal abandon? Well, because they got to build up the infrastructure for the AI prison planet. But then it's like, well, hold on. China has 1.4 billion people in it, or however many. It's got to be over a billion by this point, right? We'll round down. They've got a billion people in China. They've got a social credit system. They've got persistent surveillance. And they still have one-tenth the number of server farms that we do. So that doesn't even explain it. Actually, that doesn't even explain it. If we had the same social credit score as China, somehow they can run it for three times as many people as we have, and they still have one-tenth the number of data centers. Something does not compute here. This doesn't make any sense. Why would America need 10 times the server farms to China? Even if we were doing a social credit score, clearly they're doing it without having to build all this stuff. So what is this really about? I don't have a answer that benefits us, right? I don't have a good answer in terms of how this would benefit us. Just insane. Yeah, I don't know why I hadn't thought of it. It's like, wait, China does have a social. They do have persistent video surveillance everywhere. And they have three times as many people as us, and they still don't require this data. So what is this about? What are they trying to do with all this? I'm suspicious. Now, I want to go to this longer video, and then we'll cover what Stanley Kubrick's daughter, Vivian Kubrick, said about the missing 20 minutes of Eyes Wide Shut on the other side. This is a longer video. Usually I don't like to go to these longer videos, but I do think this one's worth it. Clip number 9 here. This is Blair Cottrell arguing against the Australian hate speech laws. And I think this is extra important because obviously I'm not as tuned in to what's going on in Australia, so I didn't even know some of this stuff was happening. But clearly, as has been the case for a while, Australia is a testing ground for the New World Order. Just like they were the ones with the COVID camps, they're the first with this very obvious but effective method of literally destroying democracy itself. I think you'll see what I mean. I'm not a fan of democracy, but people's ability to participate in politics, probably a good thing. So let's go now. This is Blair Cottrell, clip number 9, an Australian talking about very sophisticated method being used to enslave that entire continent. Let's watch.
Picture this. Your country is overwhelmed by immigration and poor leadership. There's rampant crime,
there's terrorism, and housing is completely unaffordable. You'll never own a home like your parents did, and it's really not even safe to just go for a walk in the streets where you grew up. But the presiding government ignores the problems and just keeps doing what the money tells them to do. So you and your mates get together, and you start talking about how to solve some of these problems. But you realize to have a lasting impact, you need a political party. You need to contest elections and win some seats in parliament. You start by making some videos online. You host some protests, some meetings, and your message is really resonating with the people. Within a year, you've got almost 2,000 members signed on and many more supporters, more than enough to register a party with the Electoral Commission. Your plan is to halt immigration, which will instantly drop the price of property and rent. You want to restore national manufacturing, get our oil refineries going again, and put the Australian people, the original working class, first. But then early one morning, riot police kick your door in. They drag you out of bed and say you're a member of a prohibited hate group and you're under arrest. You ask them what that means and what crime you've committed, but they don't answer you. They don't actually know what you did or didn't do. They're just on orders to arrest you. And the truth is, you didn't do anything. You haven't actually broken any laws. The problem is, your political party just got made illegal. In the weeks following, all your party members are arrested. Because while you were trying to register your party, the presiding government used a new law which allows them to ban political parties on the basis that those parties are hateful. Some of your members do deals with cops to stay out of prison. Others go to jail for 10 or 15 years. That's the end of your party, and you're in jail for the foreseeable future. That might sound crazy, like that could only happen in some banana republic or a very corrupt third world country. But as of January this year, the Australian government can and has been doing this. On May 15th of this year, Foreign Minister Tony Burke used new laws rushed through Parliament after the Bondi terror attack to ban the White Australia Party as a prohibited hate group. Now, the government in Australia hasn't tried to do anything like this in a long time. Back in 1951, Prime Minister Robert Menzies tried to make a law to ban the Communist Party of Australia. But the High Court stepped in and said, you can't just ban political parties. That basically violates everything we stand for as a democracy. Menzies wasn't ready to give up, though. He put a referendum to the people seeking public support to ban the Communist Party, but the people refused. The public wasn't too keen on communism, but they still agreed that banning political parties was undemocratic, so the precedent was set. Outlawing political parties wasn't allowed. Back to the present day, the White Australia Party obviously had nothing to do with the Bondi terror attack, but they've been outlawed as a hate group anyway, based on laws that were made immediately after that terror attack and as a consequence of that attack. How does banning the White Australia Party stop terrorism? It doesn't, at all. The government is just set on banning certain political parties, but why? Well, new political parties are rising all across the West, opposing mass immigration and vowing to undo the damage former governments have done to their own nations. These new parties are generating huge amounts of support. Ever since social media changed the way we access information and the kind of information we can see, old governments or the traditional two-party voting systems have never been more unpopular. Basically, people's eyes are wide open now, especially after COVID. The traditional major parties of the West have really fallen out of favor with the people, and they're on the way out. But in Australia, the presiding government has created a scheme for clinging to power in a way which really steamrolls our national constitution and essentially amounts to treason. The laws they just rushed through at the start of 2026 are called Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate and Extremism Bill. They allow the government to ban political parties and jail their political opponents for up to 15 years. And they've done this in spite of the legal precedent set by the High Court in 1951. It's like they don't even care what the federal court says. But here's the crazy part. No one in a party that's being banned needs to have committed any actual crimes. The presiding government only needs to be satisfied that the targeted party's members have engaged in hateful conduct, even if that hateful conduct was years in the past. What is hateful conduct? The definition is loose. It's basically whatever the government decides it wants hateful to mean. The meaning of hate in the context of this law is almost entirely subjective, meaning it doesn't have a strong fixed definition. And they've used this term deliberately so they can flexibly apply this law to any group or party the government wants to cancel. So when you hear government ministers talk about hate or even hate crime, that's not a term referencing any legitimate criminal activity. It can mean pretty much anything. You can say something that challenges government policy in a way which embarrasses a certain minister, and they can decide you're guilty of a hate crime, any group you're involved in, even loosely, you don't have to be a direct member, any group you're associated with can be outlawed as a hate group on the basis of your comments or your conduct, which doesn't even have to be criminal. Now, I'm not someone who tries to drum up outrage for clicks. I'm not trying to sell you a T-shirt. I'm trying to tell you that if you're Australian like me, we're in a lot of trouble here. The major parties in our country have exploited terrorism to make a deal to cancel democracy so we can't vote them out. Until this year, every Australian citizen had the right to register political parties, contest elections, and vote for a party of their choosing, but that just got cancelled. While the media talks about taxes and the definition of a woman, your right to fully participate in politics, express yourself freely, and vote the way you choose to vote just got shut down. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to Australia, and no one's talking about it because the government has deliberately misframed it as banning Nazis. But they're lying, because this law isn't actually about banning Nazis. This is about cancelling your right to contest elections, forge new political parties, and vote freely. The Labor Party is using anti-Nazi moral hysteria to try to prevent people from understanding or criticizing this new law. If you don't like the hate group law, then you must be a Nazi. That's what they're trying to imply. But isn't the whole reason Nazis are even considered bad is because they ban political parties and try to eradicate certain people and ideologies? So what, to fight Nazis, the government needs to do exactly what Nazis did historically? And the White Australia Party was trying to participate in politics legally through a registered political party. So even if they are Nazis, whatever that even actually means these days, they were forced to operate within a certain legal framework, which prevented violence and extremism, which is the whole point of democracy. But that framework is now gone, which obviously encourages political violence. And what happens when thousands of White Australia members and supporters retreat to One Nation, which they're currently doing since their original party was banned? Well, then the government can just ban One Nation as well, on the basis that its new members and associates are guilty of hate. And there's no realistic way for One Nation to protect itself from this outcome. Even if they shut down their branches and introduce strict vetting process, people are going to slip through the cracks and someone will have done something the government decides is hateful at some point in the past. One Nation really has no choice but to demand these laws are repealed immediately and campaign on that basis. Because even if One Nation or other political parties are not banned immediately on the basis of this law, the threat of a ban will constantly loom overhead, coercing the way these parties behave and forcing them into deals they otherwise wouldn't have done. Any political party which expects to participate in politics independently and forge its own policies freely has to contest the next election purely on the grounds of repealing these new laws. Constitutional legal expert Dr. Anne Twomey just 3 days ago sounded the alarm, using her YouTube channel to warn Australia that the government has implemented these laws to set a precedent for banning political parties to preserve its position and cancel its opponents. Former White Australia Party member Thomas Sewell has applied for an emergency injunction at the High Court, which was accepted and is scheduled for a hearing in September to try to fight these laws. Every Australian with a brain has a moral duty to oppose these laws. Every sensible person will stop worrying about the definition of a woman and start talking about these hate group laws. Nothing in Australia is more pressing right now. So share this video with your friends and family and help them understand.
And I'd say nothing is more pressing worldwide, because obviously it's not just Australia that's being subjected to this. It's sort of a testing ground. See if they can get the language right to, you know, minimize outrage about this. But, you know, it's really an incredibly effective trick, just labeling things as hate. Hate is subjective. Hate is vague. It's, you know, what does it really mean? I mean, if a fact can be hateful, all you're doing is just saying we're just going to censor. We're just going to censor you, and hate is whatever. You know, it's like yesterday when I described sort of the view of morality as not being good versus evil with the straight line down the middle, but more of like a circle where inside is the truth and goodness and life and outside is hate, right? That sort of, it's like inside the circle is what is good for the Australian power structure. What is good for the people who want to enslave the planet? That's considered good and loving. And for outside of that, you're in the hate zone. Sorry. Sorry, we declared your beliefs hate, so now you can't have them anymore. I mean, you wouldn't think people would fall for this, but they certainly are. That, again, was Blair Cottrell, and I thought that was a very pertinent warning, not just for the people of Australia, but the people everywhere in every Anglosphere nation, certainly. including us. Now, if you watch the Eighth Front War, there's a clip in that where Australians are talking about the new hate speech laws that were enacted following the Bondi shooting. And the woman asks, if I criticize Israel, if I criticize the way they wage war, if I say they're committing genocide, would that be in violation of the anti-Semitism strictures? And the guy says, yeah, it would. So let's be clear. In Australia, if you criticize Israel or claim that they're bad or that they are committing genocide or that they're, you know, if you talk negatively about the nation state of Israel, they will declare that you are anti-Semitic and they will actually send you to jail for years if they can. Which is interesting because if we go to clip number 3 here, this was a video posted by Israeli National Security Minister Ben-Gvir. It's an AI depiction of Palestinians on a conveyor belt into a slaughterhouse. So let's go ahead and watch clip number 3 here. Okay, so here you see Ben-Gvir, AI video, pressing the red button as all of these, I guess, you know, innocent Palestinians, you know, guilty of not wanting to be killed by Israelis. Yeah, we can take it down. So, just so we're clear, that video of Ben-Gvir celebrating the gas chambers he's created, the Nazi-style execution conveyor belt that he's celebrating, that's not hateful. Okay, because that's a Jewish person. Okay, that's Israel. They're allowed to kill their enemies, even without a trial. Okay, even if they're not really accused and have no ability to defend themselves and the system that's running is outside of all restrictions of human rights and, you know, basic humanity, it doesn't matter. That's good and loving and beautiful and wonderful. If, however, you claim that that video we just saw, Ben-Gvir running the conveyor belt of death, is bad, well, now you're hateful. How dare you spread your vile anti-Semitic hate on innocent angel Ben-Gvir, who did nothing wrong? Certainly you can't consider murdering Palestinians by the dozens wrong. That's not hateful. That's beautiful and loving and good, okay? But calling it genocide, you're going to jail, okay? If you don't like this, if you think what you're seeing on screen right now, the human conveyor belt of death, is bad, that's called hate. You are now a hateful person, and maybe you need a little bit of therapy to help you understand this hate, okay? Maybe you need to go to a mental hospital. Maybe prison's not right for you. Maybe you need to be medicated until you stop being so hateful about poor innocent Ben-Gvir and his loving conveyor belt of death, okay? So in Australia, you're not, yeah, welcome to Israel, folks. See, that's loving and beautiful and good. And if you have empathy or sympathy for the father in the plastic handcuffs who, you know, was on a boat near Israel, that was the crime he committed, was, you know, trying to bring food to starving people on a boat, and he deserves it, and he should be murdered probably. And if you're against that, sorry, that's hate. You're hateful, okay? So don't even try to criticize Ben-Gvir, because that makes you an anti-Semite. You're going to jail. Okay. Glad we cleared that up. Glad everything is so normal and good and not everybody going insane because of one particular country's desperation to be able to kill everybody without anybody criticizing them or even talking back even once. So it's time we just see this for what it is and cast off the shackles. Can we all cast off the shackles together? Wouldn't be that hard.
We're in war mode here at AlexJonesLive.com. We are taking to the globalists on every front. We are exposing the next pandemic. We're fighting these illegal wars, and we're having huge success. That's because of you out there, our backers, who are just as important as I am. And I get constant emails and text messages on the street. How do we support? And I go to theoffshowstore.com, get great supplements, get great t-shirts, spread the word. A lot of people say, I want to make a donation. So at theoffshowstore.com, there's a big button at the top. You can make a straight pledge to support the broadcast right now. You can also text to a number and make a donation. And then 100% of what you donate goes into this fight to hire more crew, more reporters, more hosts. We want to be bigger than InfoWars ever was at AlexJonesLive.com. You know I'm never going to stop, but you've got to amplify what myself and the team are doing. So you can make a pledge to keep us in this fight at theolivestonestore.com, or you can text PLEDGE, P-L-E-D-G-E, to 342581. That's PLEDGE to 342581. We'll send you a link where you can contribute directly. $25, $50, $100, whatever you can do helps keep the operation going and literally strikes death blows at the New World Order. So if you believe in what we're doing and you want to stand with us and amplify what we're doing, text PLEDGE to 342581 right now. We are fighting harder than ever. We are committed. We have a long record of having the most devastating victories against the globalists. We want to do things greater than we've ever done, but we can't do it without you. You are part of this family in this fight. I salute you for your support, and I'm asking those of you that really want to support, who've asked how you can support, to go right now on your phone and text PLEDGE to 342581 and get in this fight more than ever. Get that link and take action now with your pledge. Thank you so much for your support.
What's that on your chest, mister?
It's a pledge pin, sir.
A pledge pin!
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.